This is the Quality News Network. Islamic militants in Pakistan hold up to a mosque with hostages, ignored an offer to surrender in exchange for $83 each. The leader of the militants said they would consider leaving if the government met their demands. When Pakistani officials refused, gunfire and explosions erupted. New evidence is surfacing regarding the terrorist bombings in the United Kingdom. Investigators searching a house near Glasgow Airport found bomb-making materials. Two men crashed a jeep into barriers outside the airport terminal on Friday. A subway derailed in London's rush hour traffic this morning, injuring 37 people. Authorities believe the accident was caused by an obstruction on the tracks. British authorities have lowered England's terrorist threat level from critical to severe. The western U.S. is cooking in record heat temperatures. Northern Idaho is expected to top 100 degrees today. Forecasters say Las Vegas should reach 116. Good news for residents in Oklahoma and Kansas. Floodwaters are subsiding. The city manager from Miami, Oklahoma, where the worst flooding occurred, said they're seeing a decrease of floodwaters by about half an inch each hour. 110 children all survive after their boats capsized in the Irish Sea. The children were racing in a junior sailing competition when they were thrown into frigid waters. Officials say a sudden squall caused the boats to tip over. In Baghdad, a roadside bomb killed two U.S. soldiers, while a car bomb exploded and killed 17 people. 13 U.S. soldiers have died in combat so far this month. A violent day in the Gaza Strip where Israeli forces killed 11 militants. It's one of the worst days of fighting since Hamas wrestled control of Gaza last month. Fighting escalated when an Israeli patrol inside Gaza spotted armed militants approaching and then called an airstrike. Yemeni authorities worked quickly to arrest dozens of suspects, all with al-Qaeda links, in the suicide bombing at the Queen of Sheba Temple on Monday. Seven tourists from Spain died in that attack. In Somalia, the mayor of Mogadishu survived an attempt on his life. He says it's the second attempt in 2 months. A roadside bomb exploded near a convoy he was riding in. No one else was hurt in the blast. And freed British reporter Alan Johnston has been awarded a prize from Amnesty International. This is QNN.
If you're a news junkie, there's a book you must read called Don't Mess with the Press, How to Write, Report, and Produce Quality Television News. Don't Mess with the Press is a textbook for journalism students and a handbook for people already in the business. While written primarily as an instructional guide, Don't Mess with the Press is also useful for people who follow the news closely, who want to understand how news decisions are made by quality reporters to ensure they get the best news coverage possible. Don't Mess with the Press was written by Tony Seaton, founder and executive producer of the Quality News Network. Tony began his broadcast journalism career in his teens, eventually covering Watergate, 6 elections, 5 space shots, and a wide range of general news. He also produced Barbara Walters' news interviews for ABC. Ordering information for Don't Mess with the Press can be found at qualitynewsnetwork.com. Visit our website and click on the Don't Mess with the Press link.
Scientists have identified the eucalyptus tree as a tree with superior genes that influence the way wood is developed. There are 700 different species of eucalyptus, and they're some of the fastest-growing woody plants in the world. 3 swans found dead in eastern France have tested positive for bird flu. French officials raised the country's bird flu threat from moderate to high. U.S. companies in the service industry saw a healthy growth rate last month. According to the Institute for Supply Management, both manufacturing and non-manufacturing surveys point to the U.S. economy perking up as the second quarter drew to a close. Research in Motion has won the right to market its BlackBerry device in China, the world's largest mobile phone market. Sales in China start next month. And the Coca-Cola company made a bid to buy Snapple, while Daimler Chrysler and BMW could partner on the production of small cars. That's in order to share costs. Production is set for 2012. Cable TV companies are raising rates for subscribers with set-top boxes to help pay for new versions mandated by the FCC. Rates are estimated to increase by $2 to $3 a month. Lightsweet crude oil is trading at $71.81 a barrel. And on Wall Street today, the Dow Jones ended down 11 points. The NASDAQ was up 12 points. And the S&P 500 was up 1 point. There's more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Claudia Eisman.
Okay! Don't you stop America! Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Is it 6 o'clock Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, God knows what, God knows where else already? It is, apparently, and I most assuredly am Bob Kincaid, and I am glad to be back with you. For those of you here in the U.S. who spent yesterday marking, mourning, bemoaning, grieving, or even possibly celebrating Independence Day, I hope you had a good one. We did what we had to do for the kids. We took them over to the little carnival and the fireworks show. And boy, the carnival's getting lamer and lamer every year. We were down to 3 rides. It's pretty sad, really. I don't know. Maybe could it be the cost of fuel keeping those semis from driving the bullet from town to town? Could that be what we're witnessing here? I don't know. I don't know. But carnival's kind of lame. It really was. Although, you know, and I didn't know this, I won Agnes her first ever stuffed animal at a carnival. And she's really disgusted with me for mentioning this. I thought it was charming. It warmed the cockles of my heart, whatever a cockle is. But, yeah, Deadeye Bob with the little air cork gun just slaughtering styrofoam cups to get a stuffed purple dragon for Agnes. And she was just as cute as could be when I handed it to her. Those are little magic moments in a 14-year-old marriage. Just tickled me to pieces to see the smile it brought to her face. Okay, she's blushing now, so she's not mad at me anymore. Yeah, oh, you are red as a beet. No, I'm not going on. This is fun. Can she get... Someday we'll have a video cam for this, and you can... redder? Aw, it's just charming. I'm gonna go shoot more styrofoam cups and bring you home like a stuffed puppy or something. It was wonderful. It was a nice moment. But the carnival was lame. The carnival was lame, wasn't it, Agnes?
Yeah.
Yeah, and these things really do bring out the best in America. grifters hustling cigarettes. And I don't get American parenting, because there were kids there not much older than our own daughters who looked like they were fairly well raised. I mean, they were clean, you know, not like they had, you know, the tattoos up and down there. Well, some of those too, but okay, I'm just old, but never mind. I'm just old. But Agnes looked up and said, "Well, you know, I've burned many skirts bigger than that." Mom and Dad just let them go out the door. Anybody, have you ever seen the movie? Clueless? And the mean lawyer daddy says, "You are not going out in that." The ladies in the audience have probably heard that from a father maybe in the past at some point in time. "Young lady, you are not going out in that." Apparently that phrase has left the collective vocabulary of American parenting. But that just, I'm a prude. I'm a prude. You know, none of my business. It is none of my business. And see, that's the difference between me and some conservative right wing. Well, the moral fiber of America is going to the dogs, and the girls are dressing like street corner prostitutes. It's none of my business. It's my business what happens with my family. It is not my business to impose my will or my impression on society. Because I at least recognize that this is probably a function of me turning into an old guy. Back in my day, they never dressed like... That's jealousy. And yes, they did. And I was mighty happy about it, as are the 16 and 17-year-old boys of today. So, you know, I can at least recognize, you know, the difference. I don't know where to I've got several ideas of where to start today. I think we will start with some audio. Because I don't know if you realize this or not, but the 4th of July is apparently very special for George W. Bush. When George W. Bush thinks 4th of July, George W. Bush thinks, go to West Virginia. No kidding. He really does. George W. Bush has now spent 4 out of 7 presidential 4th of Julys in West Virginia. I don't think we've ever had an occupant of the White House come to West Virginia that many times in a term of office, let alone on one particular day. And I wish he would leave us the hell alone. But what it boils down to, I think, is that dear leader is under the impression that all 26% of the Americans who approve of him are inside the territorial confines of West Virginia. Because we've got enough interests in this state that they can always dummy up a crowd, gin up a crowd, fake up a crowd to come and cheer for him and act like he is a respectable member of the human race, which he isn't. Let's see, there was the trip to Morgantown. There was a trip to Ripley. They have a big 4th of July celebration. There was a trip to Charleston. Now, the Charleston appearance was a state appearance that he, as the President of the United States, he came to Charleston, and you could not get in to see George W. Bush unless you were pre-screened and approved by the Republican National Committee and the Republican Party of West Virginia. And it cost me, and it cost Agnes, and it cost our kids, and it cost every Democrat in the state of West Virginia some portion of some $50,000 to clean up his vile, filthy mess and attend to his terrified security needs. Okay? So, yesterday, dear leader went to Martinsburg, which is as near to not being in West Virginia as you can get and still be in West Virginia. He visited the West Virginia Air National Guard base in Martinsburg, West Virginia, and he delivered a truly embarrassing speech. Before that, and there's a couple of audio moments in this speech. I don't know if we can find them because I've just got the whole thing here. We might run across it somewhere along the way. We'll start with the beginning and then we'll hop, skip, and jump through it. But the first time I heard it, you realize that you're dealing with an evil moron. But the first time I heard it, I thought, well, maybe it was just a slip. Because they had a bunch of the little children of the families of the people who are in the West Virginia 137th Airlift Wing of the Air National Guard. They had their children stand and recite the Pledge of Allegiance with George W. Bush. And he, well, let's see if we hear this. I want you to just start at the very beginning, Agnes. At the very beginning, please, Agnes.
Speaking about families, Laura sends her love She would be with me, but I told her to fire up the grill. Don't tell her I said that. I thank Brigadier General Terry Butler, Commander, West Virginia Air National Guard, and his wife, Susan. I want to thank Eric Volmick. He's the 167th Wing Commander, and his wife, Sigrid. I appreciate being here today with a really fine United States Congresswoman, Shelley Moore Capito, and her husband, Charlie.
Shelley Moore Capito.
You don't have to worry about her support in the military.
Nope. Pause.
When we've got somebody in harm's way, she understands what I understand.
And that is, they ain't gonna. It ain't gonna be me, and it ain't gonna be Ms. Cameltoe in harm's way. Yes, Agnes, she did vote against their medical benefits because she despises people in the military. So they're props. They're just like a, oh, I don't know. They're like a cream pie in a vaudeville act. They're just props. They're toys. They're not real. Well, I guess so. I guess I cut out the part where he, well, I don't know. Let's see. Hold on. Keep going.
That military person and his or her family deserve the very strongest support from the federal government at all times. I enjoyed reciting the Pledge of Allegiance with some
there
of the
is.
Children
okay.
From our military
run it
families.
Back just a hair, Agnes.
I thought they handled their tasks.
Run it back just a hair.
Tasks quite well.
No, that's no. That, run it
I
back.
I appreciate
some,
Major
please.
Dave Reynolds, Chaplain.
Honey, that's forward.
No, it's backwards. If you're over here, you'll see.
There, now you're on backwards. Here we go. Listen to what he calls the Pledge of Allegiance.
For the children from our military families.
No, you got to go backwards, honey.
I am going back, Paul. If you can do better, you do it.
Well, I'm not in the chair where I could do better. Here we go.
I enjoyed reciting the Pledge of Allegiance with some of the children
okay,
from our military families.
I enjoyed reciting the Pledge of Allegiance with some of the children.
And I was being as charitable as I can be. I thought, like I said, I thought, yeah, well, you know, maybe he just stumbled. You know, he's not a very good public speaker. The Pledge of Allegiance, as opposed to the Pledge of Allegiance. Okay, I realize I am nitpicking here, but it is emblematic of something. And there is stuff going on in this speech. You know, there's no you know real howling, real howlers like you know food on your family or. Fish and people can live together in peace. There's none of that in this speech. Now, you can tell if you listen all the way through it that he was happy. He really was. He was happy to be there because he thought he was among people who still like him. But later on, he says it again. He said, the children who said the Pledge of Allegiance with me, this dumbass thinks it's called the Pledge of Allegiance. My God, makes you wonder if he says Chimbley and Library, too. Lord God, Billy Bob, what a... Oh, what an unutterable buffoon. But please go on, Agnes.
Families, I thought they handled their tasks quite well.
That was a task.
I appreciate Major Dave Reynolds, Chaplain, for giving the blessing. I thank the 249th Army Band of the West Virginia Army National Guard for playing here today.
They brought their washboards and jugs and banjos and harmonicas.
And most importantly, thank you all for coming. Thanks for being here. 4th of July is a day for celebration and a day for gratitude. Across America, our citizens are going to come together for parades and pyrotechnic displays.
Had to work on that.
Readings from our Declaration of Independence. It's a grand celebration. It's a great day to be an American. And when we carry on these festivities, it's important you know we're carrying on a grand tradition.
Ah, it's a grand
this
tradition.
This isn't the first time our country has celebrated the 4th of July.
No kidding.
As a matter of fact, I would like to read a couple of paragraphs from a 1777 newspaper.
No, back
and here's
it up
what
again.
It said on the...
Yeah, you have to. I know it's like a car wreck, Agnes. Okay, that ought to be enough.
Time our country has celebrated the 4th of July. As a matter of fact, I would like to read a couple of paragraphs from a 1777 newspaper.
1977 newspaper.
And here's what it said on the first anniversary of the Declaration, as it described a scene in Philadelphia. The 4th of July was celebrated with joy and festivity. Fine performances, a number of toasts, followed by a discharge of artillery and small arms. Don't do that today. And at night there was a grand exhibition of fireworks, and the city was beautifully illuminated. This newspaper article from Philadelphia in 1777 went on to say, "Thus may that glorious and memorable day be celebrated through America by the sons of freedom from age to age till time shall be no more." We're still celebrating, and rightly so.
Pause. Do you hear the fake hillbilly? We're still a-celebrating. Still a-celebrating. No, that was fake hillbilly. He never says us nothing. That was worked into the... We're still a-celebrating. It was celebrated with discharges of artillery and small arms fire. Don't y'all do that. Oh, God. Yeah, I don't think he'd say that if he was delivering that address in New York or Philadelphia or anywhere else in this country. Don't y'all do that. You know, because us ignorant hillbillies, we're liable to take the jug with the corncob stopper in it and the old musket that great-grandpap fought in the Civil War with and go out and have us a high old time and just shoot off our squirrel rifles. Right, George? You supercilious prick.
That's being nice.
That's being nice. Well, okay, he's super silly. Move on up to the next clip, please, Agnes. All right, okay, here we go.
You're showing that the courage which won our independence more than two centuries ago is alive and well here in West Virginia. Since the attacks of September the 11th, 2001.
Oops!
Every operational unit of the West Virginia National Guard has been deployed, and some are on their second and third deployments. One member of the 167th Airlift Wing, Master Sergeant Richard Howland, has been deployed seven times since the 9/11 attacks. And this good man just volunteered to go to Baghdad for an eighth deployment in September.
Hold on. Is that his uniquely American moment? Does this evil little man not understand what an indictment that is of himself? Grammar moment. At least I worry about it. He doesn't. You remember when he was on the stage with the woman and this lady here works three jobs? It's uniquely American. Remember that? Well, this is that again. Here's a poor schlub, just an old West Virginia boy, who has had to go into that hellhole of either Afghanistan or Iraq seven times since March of 2003. Seven times. This guy's a guardsman. He's not regular army. I gotta tell you, I get these late night cravings, and Agnes looks at me funny. But last night it was a craving for a Häagen-Dazs ice cream bar. We'd gotten home from the carnival and everything. What is it, Agnes?
No.
Okay. And everybody was ensconced and happy, and we were out of the thunderstorm. Of course there was a thunderstorm. It was the 4th of July. And so I toddled down into town to grab an ice cream bar. Needless to say, Bob's Law kicked in, there were no ice cream bars to be had. But along the way, I stopped and talked with a neighbor who's in the West Virginia National Guard. I said, "You're done with them now, right?" And he goes, "Oh, no. They done told me. Anytime between now and October, they'll be sending me again." This guy's got a little boy and a little girl that are the same age as Agnes and my children. He said, "Ought to be over. Ought to be done. But they're going to send us again." So I know that that means not just him, but several of my neighbors will have to go over into the meat grinder again. And it's a sick feeling looking at somebody and thinking, you know, I don't know if you're going to be here with us this time next year. Because there's an evil little monster occupying the White House who doesn't care if you live or die. And I looked at him and I said, "You realize that George Bush doesn't give a damn whether you live or die, don't you?" And he said, "Yeah, I know that." He said, "Yeah, I know that." So I don't think we need George Bush coming to West Virginia and telling us how wonderful it is that he is destroying our National Guard by rotating them into Iraq 6 and 7 and 8 times. Agnes, move up to 9:30, please. This speech just gets crazier and crazier and crazier. Nuttier and nuttier. That'll do. No, back up. Yeah. That's fine. He works himself into a fever pitch because he remembers the heady days. If you saw the article in the newspaper in the Washington Post last week, you know, he's isolated and he doesn't like to go out and play golf or blow up frogs anymore. But no, coming to West Virginia, he feels like he's safe. He feels like he's at home. He feels like he's among the only people that still understand him. And so he can work up those campaign stump speeches that he used to do. And, I mean, you'll hear it. We'll get to it. There's a point where he starts screaming into the microphone. I mean, you know, the real, genuine Nuremberg, "Haben Sie gehört, hatten geworden sein, Sieg Heil!" You know, all of that. You'll hear it, but we'll start here.
"Serve my country like those before me for the cause of freedom. America is proud to have citizens like Derek and Brad that we call neighbors and friends and defenders of the peace.
Defenders of the peace? What peace? We don't have peace.
And your service is needed. We need for people to volunteer to defend America. Because in this war, we face dangerous enemies who have attacked us here at home. Oh, I know the passage of time has convinced some, maybe convinced some, that the danger doesn't exist. But that's not how I see it.
That's because you're insane.
And that's not how many of you see it. These people want to strike us again.
Who? What people? Pause. Stop. I can't stand it. I'm going to put my foot through a window. The Iraqis want to attack us again? The Iraqis didn't attack us the first time. Go push. What did I tell you? This is like the stump speeches we got in the 2004 election cycle. He's comfortable again. He's among the ignorant hillbillies, and he thinks that we'll believe any piece of trash he throws out there. I'm sorry, Agnes, that's not my attitude, that's his.
Yeah, they attacked us before and they want to attack us again. That's why, oh, Jesus.
He was talking about two two boys who grew up together in Martinsburg, joined the National Guard together out of high school. Couldn't go to college, couldn't afford college. That's why they're in the National Guard, George. Trying to get some college money. And he says they signed up, and we need people to defend America. Because we was attacked here once, and they want to attack us here again. Just sitting there, bald-faced, lying to a bunch of people from West Virginia who literally lay their lives on the line, and he plays with their lives like a snake plays with a mouse. To watch the video is... I did, you see, and it's enough to make you want to cry or scream or throw dinnerware. Fortunately for us, we use Corel and it doesn't break.
Yes, it does.
But it does shatter, and when it does, it's a real mess. Go on, Agnes.
Learn on September the 11th.
Now, back up a hair.
That
just make it do that and just back it up a hair, yeah, so we can get the full context. Here we go.
And that's not how many of you see it. These people want to strike us again. We learned on September the 11th that in the age of terror, the best way to do our duty, which is to protect the American people...
He said duty.
...is to go on the offense and stay on the offense. And that's exactly what we've been doing against these radicals and extremists.
Dance, monkeys, dance. Now he's stealing Rudy Giuliani's lines. We're going to stay on the offense.
It is best that we take the fight to where the enemy lives. So we don't have to face them where we live. And so since 9/11 is precisely the strategy we have followed. In Afghanistan, where I know some of you have been deployed, and some of you are deployed, we removed a regime that gave sanctuary and support to Al-Qaeda as they planned the 9/11 attacks, which killed nearly 3,000 citizens. They found safe haven. That's what they like. They like a place where they can plot and plan in relatively security.
Oh, all stop aiming. For a minute, Agnes. Oh, I think I just threw up in my mouth a little bit. They like a place where they can plan and plot. Cockroaches like a place that's dark and warm and damp. This is pure insanity because some of you are serving in Afghanistan and some of you have and that's because there's the evildoers. Of course, he didn't have time to give them the latest news out of Pakistan. You do remember Pakistan, don't you? Pakistan, the home, the country where the head of the ISI, their sort of secret police outfit, did the direct $100,000 wire transfer to Mohammed Atta prior to 9/11 and was actually in the United States having, like, brunch at the Pentagon on 9/11. That Pakistan didn't give them the news out of Pakistan where the Red Mosque and an entire neighborhood of Islamabad, the nation's capital, I do believe, has become what is described by journalists there as a war zone. This would be nuclear Pakistan, of course. The Pakistan that we didn't bomb into smithereens for developing nuclear weapons. The Pakistan that has a whole boatload of nuclear weapons now. The Pakistan that teeters on the brink of turning into an... What's their word? Oh, an Islamo-fascist nation. The Pakistan where General Pervez Musharraf, who stole the government... go figure. Stole the government from a democratically elected one, and his head now rests precariously upon his neck. the Pakistan that if Musharraf falls, it will fall to a bunch of religious fundamentalists who, like fundamentalists here, believe that the world's about 2 or 3 days old and doesn't much matter if the whole thing is burnt to a cinder, because then the magic Jesus or the super Mahdi or the 13 and 7/8 Imam will come back and put all the fires out. Yeah, that Pakistan. He can't give them the news from Pakistan. He can't even give them the real news from Afghanistan, and that is that we are going, have gone to hell in a handbasket. Why is it so hot, and why am I in this handbasket? Because he and his stupid administration have screwed that up too. A week or so ago, our good friend Mark Levine and I had a little bit of a discussion about whether the Bush administration is stupid. Mark said, no, they're evil geniuses. And I keep coming back to, nope, street punks, stupid street punks. Because they just make their moves and they don't remember that the other side has a move too, or 12. This is chess, not checkers. And as a consequence of that, this is the act in haste, repent in leisure crowd when you get right down to it. And they are as dangerous as they can be, not because of their evil genius, but because of their stupid, small-minded pig-headedness. You see what I mean? Because they never stopped to think what would happen if nuclear Pakistan became a fundamentalist state. Do you know what I mean? They're worried about a nuclear Iran, a nuclear Pakistan that is in the hands of fundamentalists is about 30,000 times more terrifying. Let's go to the phones real quick and talk to our good friend Gene in Oregon, our news ninja. Hey, Gene, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
I'm trying to keep it together, man.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I just wanted to let you know it's kind of a local issue, but it was kind of scary to me. I was chairing my DFAC meeting today, and we were talking about, I see the disability community is kind of shortchanged because of education. Mm-hmm. They tend to get the majority of funds. So we had kind of a confab on how to lobby and all that stuff. Turned out there were two guys from some private corp there taking notes. And I suppose that's not a big deal, but, you know, it kind of bothered me because we've been having some really weird little things going on. Of course, you're following the Cheney fish kill thing.
Yeah.
We're trying to get Gordon Smith kind of hooked in on this, because we think that there's a chance that he actually, you know, we know he did, but we're trying to prove it. Talk to Cheney about
right
that kind of stuff. I'm sorry to take you off your topic. I just kind of wanted to check in and, you know, a lot of places to go in the world today with.
No, don't worry about taking me off topic. This is ADD radio for. I'm on air with attention deficit disorder every night.
So anyway, I was just going to let you know though. One other thing we're trying to do is I got to talk to one of my state senators to see if we can find a systemic bias against disabled people in general, and see if we can talk to the state, you know, maybe bring a lawsuit or something.
I hope you can. I sincerely hope you can. And, you mentioned conversations between Cheney and folks out there in Oregon. If you will go back to that Angler series, and I think it's still up at the Washington Post, and read that first article, you will find, the one with the environmental stuff and the fish kill in it. You'll find there's a member of Congress's name, from Oregon. So you start there and you work toward Gordon Smith and you bust him in 2008.
We're trying. Anyway, I just wanted to say hi, and I'll catch you later.
All right. You have a great evening.
You too.
Take care, Gene.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Gene is the original news ninja and does a whale of a wonderful job, as do all the ninjas, on the headonradionetwork.com. Again, you know, it's a case where we're very, very fortunate. Agnes, let's go back to Dear Leader. I'd like to finish this up and just have done with him, because I can only take so much nausea at a sitting, and I'd like to know that we're done with it. Just pick up where we... here we go. A little more Dear Leader. Yeah, I know. Hairball, Agnes.
To come and harm the citizens of the greatest face for liberty in the world.
Face
today,
for
because
liberty?
We acted, the terrorist camps in Afghanistan have been shut down. 25 million people have been liberated. And the Afghan people have elected a government that is fighting terrorists instead of harboring terrorists.
Now, hold on there. Hold on there just a minute. 25 million people have been liberated, and they have a government that's fighting terrorists instead of harboring terrorists. I want you to understand what an insult it is when this man comes to West Virginia, because he thinks that he can just look at people and lie like a rug, and that we'll just sit there, hey, give me a swig out of the jug, Paul. He's talking some more of that truth. Oh, smooth. I like it with a peach in it. And we'll just sit there, yeah, all right, he's liberated in Afghanistan. I guess he doesn't think that PBS or Frontline or anything, or the internets or the Google, reach West Virginia. A lot of mountains there. We call it the Mountain State. So we don't know that Afghanistan is gone into chaos. We don't know that Hamid Karzai, the former Union Oil executive who was in charge of the rights and acquisitions and has been installed as president of Afghanistan, we don't know that old Hamid gets up every morning and shaves and wonders when the next time a razor touches his neck, will it be going all the way through to the bone. He thinks we don't know that. He thinks we don't understand that Pakistan, that I mentioned a minute ago, which is on fire right now, he thinks that we don't understand that that country has an ongoing border war with Afghanistan. He thinks we don't, and their terrorist camps have been demolished, and he thinks we don't, he didn't mention the fact that they've been rebuilt. Because, again, he's in homey West Virginia, where the stupid people live. That's why he comes here. 4 years out of seven that the man has been president, he has come to the state of West Virginia and babbled a bunch of bug spray. Where else? I want to know. You tell me. Where else in America could George Bush go and say that, yeah, we're fighting them over there so we won't have to fight them, and have anybody do anything but go, crazy? Except here. Of course, it was a captive audience. It was a bunch of wives and mothers and daughters and sons and uncles and grandpas and grandmas and a few active duty folks whose entire world depends on him telling them the truth. And they will delude themselves, and they will lie to themselves, and they will do anything in the world to help themselves believe him. Because they are invested in what he has told them. They are invested in his lies. And they are invested with blood and gristle and sinew and bone and nerve and skin. They are invested up to their ears. fuel prices keep going up. Their grocery prices are going up. Everything is coming apart. And the only thing these poor people witnessing this stunning display of mendacity had to hang on to was this man's disingenuous words. It is heartbreaking to watch. And they sit there and they cheer. They cheer because if they don't cheer, they will fall apart weeping. That's how sad it is. Agnes, let's roll on. Not the same ovations it used to get, are they?
These enemies of ours have got an ideology.
Oh, really?
They believe in something.
What?
In other words, the attacks are just a tactic to enable them to spread their dark vision of the world. Perhaps one way to differentiate between our thoughts is just think about religion. In the great country of the United States, we believe that you should be able to worship any way you see fit. That you're equally American regardless of your religious beliefs. They believe that if you...
Yeah, look at that. He goes to try to describe what it means to be America, and the first place he goes to is that we are free to believe whatever insane BS we choose to believe, whatever made-up crap that we want to believe, we're free to believe. Boy, I tell you what, that sure differentiates us from the rest of the world. But then again, where else could he go? He couldn't say that this is America where when a man and a woman close the door on their house at night and put their children to bed, they can feel comfortable that some government thug won't come knocking down the door in the middle of the night. He couldn't say that because his own administration has led a full frontal assault on the Fourth Amendment. He couldn't say that the difference between us and the terrorists is that here, when you pick up the phone to call Aunt Mabel to get the fudge recipe, that you can be sure that no government punk is listening in on the conversation. He couldn't say that because his administration does that! He couldn't say that the difference between the terrorists and America is that in America, nobody can throw you in prison and just throw away the key and not let you see your family, your boss, your friends, your lawyer, nothing. Because his administration started that process in America, too. So all he had left was to explain that the reason we have to fight the terrorists is so that you can go and believe insane, crazy stuff. Go on, Agnes.
Don't worship the way they see it, then they're going to bring you harm. We believe in an Almighty. We believe in the freedom for people to worship that Almighty. They don't. They don't believe you should worship the way you choose. They believe the only way you should worship is the way they choose. And therefore, they will do anything they can to spread that ideology. And it's our charge.
Did you hear the screaming?
It's our calling. To keep the pressure on these people to defend
America. I told you he'd start screaming.
And to spread an ideology of hope. And an ideology of peace.
Now stop. So that spread an ideology of hope and an ideology of peace. No! Hope is not an ideology. Peace is not an ideology. Peace is a real thing that you have to work real hard to accomplish. Keeping the peace is harder than making the war. Peace is hard work because there are always, always, always evil, greedy, ignorant, hateful punks like George W. Bush in the world who would gut peace for a buck and a quarter. But he's on the religion thing, and he's going to ride that dark horse for the rest of this speech. Now, Agnes, let's get back to it, and I'll see if I can de-hissify myself.
The kids who came up here to give the Pledge of Allegiance.
See? What
to
I
be able
you?
To live in peace and security. There's more than one front in this war against these radicals and extremists. And obviously the toughest front of all is in Iraq.
Here
in that
comes.
Country, we removed a cruel dictator who harbored terrorists, paid the families of Palestinian suicide bombers, invaded his neighbors, defied the United Nations Security Council, pursued and used weapons of mass destruction.
Oh, liar! Damn it! Damn it! Damn it! Damn it! Damn it! Damn it! Liar! Pursued and used weapons of mass destruction. When, George? Where? Or are you talking about the ones your daddy sold him? Back when Ronald Dumsfeld, whatever, went over and visited and shook his hand and stood there grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush. Is that when you're talking about the weapons of mass destruction, George? That's what's so insulting about this entire speech. This is a 4-year-old speech. This is a speech that George Bush could not deliver anywhere else in the United States of America, not even Alabama, and expect to get applause, but he thinks he can come and tell the stupid hillbillies and we'll just lap it up because we're so damn dumb we'll believe anything. We are the Mikey from the Life cereal commercial. Yeah, just tell the West Virginians, they'll believe anything. I'm sorry. It's just sad. Are you a West Virginia? Any of you West Virginians listening to this broadcast, call me, 304-658-5912 if you want to. You're progressive, you're liberal, you're decent, and you know that that's the way that these people think about us. I remember when he was campaigning for president in 2004, and he came to Parkersburg High School, and they literally helicoptered air conditioning in for the gymnasium. Because it wasn't air conditioned. And they got that gymnasium nice and cool for the president to come and visit. And then when he left, they helicoptered the air conditioners back out. No kidding. No kidding. Oh, it's just like Jesus coming. It's going to be cool, not hot like hell nor nothing. George is coming and bringing the air conditioning. Praise God! On we go, Agnes.
Donkey on the edge, Bob. You're not going to make it very much farther.
The world is better off without Saddam Hussein in power.
Sieg Heil! Sieg Heil! Sieg Heil!
And today, U.S. and coalition troops are standing with the Iraqis. Troops.
Yeah, troops.
And the nearly 12 million Iraqis who voted for a future of peace. We're opposing ruthless enemies who want to bring down Iraq's democracy.
Enemies who have no ruth at all.
And turn that nation into a terrorist safe haven.
Ah.
Earlier this year, I announced a new strategy in Iraq under the leadership of General David Petraeus and new Ambassador Ryan Crocker. Our goal is to help the Iraqi government protect their population so they can make progress toward reconciliation.
And what else, George? Come on.
And build a free nation that respects the rights of its people and upholds the rule of law and is an ally against these extremists and terrorists and killers. And so, we sent reinforcements to help the Iraqis secure their neighborhoods, go after the terrorists and insurgents and militias that are inciting sectarian violence and help get the Capitol under control. It's a tough fight.
Yeah, no kidding.
But I wouldn't have asked those troops to go into harm's way if the fight was not essential to the security of the United States of America.
Yeah, you would, you liar. They're toys to you.
Sing higher.
Many of the spectacular car bombings and killings you see are as a result of Al-Qaeda.
Okay.
The very same folks that attacked us on September the 11th.
Ah, stop. Many of the car bombings are done by Al-Qaeda, the same folks that... folks. Yeah, the folks. God. That attacked us on September 11th. I don't know how much to say to you because you know all the stuff already, but let's review. Al-Qaeda did not exist in Iraq until after we invaded. Osama bin Laden, Ayman al-Zawahiri, none of those dudes have ever been to Iraq. This is like, for the burning, blown-up Middle East, Al-Qaeda is like the Moose Lodge. You can have one anywhere you can get enough people together who say that they're mooses. Okay? It's a particularly virulent, hateful Moose Lodge, but it is a Moose Lodge just the same. Now, what was his name? The one-legged dude that showed up in the video walking on two legs and couldn't work a machine gun. Come on, you know his name. Zarqawi. Al-Qaeda entered Iraq because Zarqawi was already there. It never entered. He just one day ran the flag up to see if anybody would salute it and said, "We're Al-Qaeda too." Remember those old commercials? We're Beatrice. We're Al-Qaeda. And it's not the same people who attacked us on 9/11. He is the last place on earth where he thinks he can get away with telling that tired, worn out, beat up, bedraggled old lie again. Yeah, the hillbillies will believe me. Okay, we're not going to finish this hour, but we'll do it next hour. Let's talk to Bob for a minute. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
What's up?
Hey, ask yourself this question.
Okay.
Okay? Now, we have invaded a country, and we are occupying that same country that we invaded. Is
mm-hmm.
that not correct?
You're absolutely right.
Okay? And we're asking those people, you know, like they always say about others, those people.
Yeah, yeah.
And they always use those people, you know. Those, but Bob, they're just the same as you and I.
Sure they are.
They live a life. They have children. They have wives. They have grandmothers.
Now, wait. They have different insane crap that they believe.
It doesn't matter how
but,
much...
Yeah. The DNA structure's all the same.
It does not matter how much insane crap you believe. It's what is truth. What is truth, Bob? Truth is that which we perceive to be truth.
I got a little problem with that definition, Bob, because
no.
Then if I believe that it's true that the sun rises in the west, then the sun rises in the west.
Yeah, well, hey. Who called it
that means
the West,
that means the truth that truth is just crazy talk.
Absolutely, that truth is
there
crazy
are
talk.
and that's why on this program we don't talk a lot about truth. We talk about facts.
There you go. Facts are better than truth. And you know what?
Because truth is malleable.
Hey, truth is. Hey, whatever you wanted to believe, truth is, and a fact, is it not? It is. It doesn't change. If you a rock is hard, and it's a hard place for our boys right now, is it not?
All true.
A rock, either way you want to spell it, you want to talk West Virginia, you want to talk downhill, hillbilly talk, come up my holler and play with me for a while. I'll give you something to speak about when you go talk to your old Jesus.
Well, I tell you what, Bob, honest to God, I'm convinced of this. There's not another state in this union where he could have gone and talked the crap he talked yesterday and gotten away with it.
No, that boy, hey, that boy is a crap talker. He don't speak the truth. He just speaks crap, and they all do. If you want to figure out a Republican, just look out the window. It's out the window, you know? Just look out there. You got them everywhere. They're your neighbors, and they think they know the truth, but they don't know anything, and they have no facts to back up what they say. They just say this Earth is, what, 6,000 years ago? 6,000 years ago, or 7, or 8, or 10, or 12, or 15. Well, they're not even sure about that. See, they can't even come up with a number to say when their Jebesus made this Earth. They can't come up with it. You know? They just keep giving you crap facts. And, you know, they're not even facts. They're just crap. See, and it's their truth. That's the truth. Just ask one of them. You know, one of those smiling followers, which way the wind blows. Go turn it there. Glenda's asking if she can go turn the barbecue, because we're going to make some ribs out here tonight.
Yum.
Yeah, hey, yummy. Yeah, it's going to be. Hey, she's better man than I am. And she's a female, like your dear Agnes is.
Right.
Just another appendage of your body. Is she not that?
No. She's so much more and so much better than that.
See, that's the truth. It's like those girls out there, Suzanne and...
Oh, the Sioux crew, yeah.
The Sioux crew, yeah. But they got a whole lot more sense than...
Yeah, see, you remember the old Bob Newhart show with Larry Darrell and Daryl?
Yeah.
Well, see, that's the Sioux crew. There's Agnes is a member of the Sioux crew, so it's this is Sue and Sue and Sue and the other Sue Agnes.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
And then there's Glenda, and she fits right in with them.
Absolutely, then. Absolutely.
And you wonder, don't you? How many human brain Ingrams were sucked out of George W.'s brain and put into that casket at the ceremony
Skull and Bones?
Skull and Bones ceremony, you know? They had to reach in with a, you know, like a scoop and pull out 97% of his brain to make him think that he was a West Virginia boy. That boy is...
No, he doesn't think that. He thinks he can come here and put on a bunch of cornpone BS, Bob, and that we'll just lap it up. That's the point. That's the insult of this.
Well,
the same mindset, and it was Karl Rove, of course, the same mindset that said, hey, let's send a pamphlet that shows John Kerry putting a knife through the Bible. The same people that sent, and they only said it in the 2004 campaign, they only said it to West Virginia and Arkansas, because that's where they thought it would be, the people were stupid enough to buy into it, okay? And this is that same mindset, that same Rovian mindset in, well, George, you can go to West Virginia again. They always love you in West Virginia, George, because they're dumb enough to believe you.
Have I ever lied to you?
Of course not.
Why should I? What do I gain by lying? Huh?
Right.
They gain a great deal by lying, and they lie repeatedly and with great gusto. Is that not correct? They lie. They just lie. And these lap dog, I don't care if they're from West Virginia or North Dakota, Republicans and these, oh God, these sad, sorry people that call themselves Democrats, that keep buying into this lie. It's a lie. You know, just ask yourself, you know, and ask, please. I'm not asking you, Bob, because I know you've already asked yourself this question. When will I wake up and actually...
Well, that's the thing, though, Bob. America has awakened. America disapproves of this guy at like 74-76%. But he still thinks he can deliver... I mean, that's what's so disgusting about this speech. That's what I'm trying to get across. This is crap he could not put out anywhere else around the country right now, Bob.
I say that 90% of America...
Right, so America is, to a certain extent, waking up. America wants things from its elected representatives. But we're not getting it.
We're not allowed to, Bob. We're not allowed to hear it on the mainstream media like we got it back in the 60s when the boys and the girls went out in the streets, banged on their pots and pans, screamed for liberty and fought and died. And some of them did die, and some of them, they went to the other box, you know, that ammo box that Mike Malloy talked about. You know, he talks about it repeatedly, that there's several boxes before you get to the point of liberty, and the last one you want to go to is the ammo box. Well, I'm going to tell you folks, get your ammo boxes filled up, learn how to shoot, and look at the SOB next to you and ask you this question, okay? Is he a friend or foe? And if he's on George W. Bush's or George Herbert Walker Bush's or Nixon's or Ford's side, then lock and load.
Bob, you can't talk that kind of stuff, buddy. You can't do that. They'll come and drag my ass away and put me in Gitmo for that.
Well, they might.
They will. Okay, you can't do it. You can't be talking about who you want to lock and load and kill. You can't just do that.
Well, I'm not telling you to do that. I'm telling you that that's what I have done. Let them come for me, son.
All right, then, but we got to go. It's news time. Agnes is going to run it.
I'm hearing the music.
All right, later.
Peace.
Bye now.
Peace.
You too. Peace. We love you, brother. This is a dangerous time. That's all I'm saying. Point out the facts. But God, I don't know, maybe we need to talk about what revolution really means. Maybe we'll do that when we're done with George in the next hour. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is a Quality News Network. A top Al-Qaeda leader delivers a message to America in a new video. In it, Ayman al-Zawahiri insists Al-Qaeda is directly leading the insurgency against American and coalition forces in Iraq. The 90-minute video, however, also raised questions with experts about possible conflicts amongst the insurgents themselves. Some Sunni insurgents have recently split from Al-Qaeda. A car bomb in a Shiite area of Baghdad killed 17 people as they were posing for wedding photos. The bride and groom were wounded. A roadside bomb also killed two U.S. troops. New evidence is surfacing regarding the terrorist bombings in the United Kingdom. Investigators say a house near the Glasgow airport was a bomb-making factory. Two men suspected in the recent failed car bombings rented the house. It was just a few miles from the airport terminal, targeted by terrorists with an explosives-laden jeep. The British government, meanwhile, is fighting to retain its anti-terrorism powers that it says are vital to the country's security. That after the courts decided those emergency powers may still violate human rights by allowing authorities to hold suspects without convicting them. A subway derailment in London was an accident and has no ties to terrorism. It happened during rush hour traffic this morning and was likely caused by debris on the tracks. 37 people were injured. Rescue crews plucked 110 children from the Irish Sea after a sudden squall capsized their small boats. It happened during a junior sailing competition. Helicopters, Navy personnel, and the Coast Guard aided in the rescue. All the children are accounted for. Yemeni authorities have worked quickly to arrest dozens of al-Qaeda-linked suspects in the suicide bombing at the Queen of Sheba temple on Monday. The attack killed 7 Spanish tourists. In Somalia, the mayor of Mogadishu survived an attempt on his life. He says it's the second such attempt in 2 months. A tense standoff is entering its third day at an Islamabad mosque in Pakistan. Authorities rejected terms for a surrender, insisting those holed up inside release women and children they're using as human shields. The western U.S. is baking in record hot temperatures. Las Vegas, Nevada is at 113 degrees, as is Phoenix, Arizona. Residents in Oklahoma and Kansas are finally seeing floodwaters subside. The city manager in Miami, Oklahoma, one of the worst hit areas, says he's seeing a decrease of floodwaters by about half an inch an hour. This is QNN.
Terry's Lounge at the Cypress Inn in downtown Carmel invites you to a great evening of your favorite foods, beverages, and live music Thursday through Saturday, featuring Dick Whittington and friends from 6 to 9:30. Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn features an appetizer-sized menu and our famous burger, salad, and fries. Afternoon tea, a great local tradition, is served from 1 to 4 p.m. daily by reservation. Sunday evenings are special as Richard Divnick entertains from 5 to 8 p.m. with classical renditions of pop, jazz, and classical music. Join the fun, food, and music at Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn, corner of Lincoln and 7th. In downtown Carmel.
A new study puts to rest the long-held myth that women talk more than men. Sampling university student conversations, researchers found men actually talk slightly more than women. The study, though limited, is in today's journal Science. It disputes unsupported statistics often used in magazine articles that say women talk 3 times more than men. 3 swans found dead in eastern France have tested positive for bird flu. French officials raised the country's bird flu threat from moderate to high. U.S. companies in the service industry saw a healthy growth rate last month. According to the Institute for Supply Management, both manufacturing and non-manufacturing surveys point to the U.S. economy perking up as the second quarter drew to a close. Research in Motion has won the right to market its BlackBerry device in China. That's the world's largest mobile phone market. Sales in China start next month. Daimler, Chrysler, and BMW could partner on the production of small cars in order to share costs. Production is set for 2012. Light sweet crude oil is trading at $71.81 on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrials was down 11 points, the NASDAQ was up 12, and the S&P was flat. There's more, of course, at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Minutes past the hour. I'm Bob. And I'm sorry. I apologize. Because I was just unprofessional or anything like that, but because I wasn't doing what I want this program to be. I love our dear friend Bob in North Dakota, to pieces. And the palpable frustration that I sense from him, that I sense from so many of you, is overwhelming. but I know enough about the First Amendment and how little it means. I mean, you heard the speech. You're still hearing the speech. We're going to finish the speech from George Bush. This, please understand, I'm not playing this for filler. I want you to hear, if you didn't, what this man came to West Virginia and said to us, thinking that we were that we would actually just lap it up and believe it. The First Amendment is garbage. The First Amendment is busted and broken. The only thing, the First Amendment is now nothing more than a life support system for a snake oil industry. Religion. The religion industry. That's it. And talking about locking and loading and getting ammunition boxes is frankly a bunch of, I don't know what to call it. Unrealistic? Sure, it's unrealistic, all right. I'm looking, this idea of, you know, and if they come and talk to me, you know, I'll show them. That's almost delusional. Okay? But I recognize it as such. I've got a story here, some stuff that was sent to me by our good friend, the Cossack. And the title of the story is Police Brutality and the Rule of Law When Killer Cops Walk. And it's a transposition of a couple of cases. On June 28th, a San Bernardino, California jury acquitted Ivory J. Webb of attempted voluntary manslaughter and assault with a firearm in a confrontation caught on videotape. He had shot Elio Carrion 3 times in the back, shoulder, and chest as the unarmed man knelt on the ground. Carrion, a U.S. airman back from Iraq when Webb shot him, survived but needed months of physical therapy. A typical American would have likely been convicted, but Webb was not typical. He was a sheriff's deputy on the job when he shot Carrion. After a high-speed car chase, Webb ordered Carrion, who had been a passenger in a now-crashed Corvette, to kneel and then stand up and then shot Carrion while he was doing as he was told. Okay? And the story is juxtaposed with this. On the night of December 26, 2001, Corey May was asleep in his Prentice, Mississippi apartment. He heard a loud crash. Concerned with the safety of his 18-month-old daughter, May fired 3 shots and killed Ron Jones, who had broken in through the back door. But Jones was a police officer looking for drugs on a false tip with a warrant naming the apartment, but not Corey May, who had a clean criminal record. May dropped his weapon once he heard that the invaders were police. He was arrested, tried for murder, and sentenced to death. His sentence has since then been commuted to life in prison. He was defending his home. He's doing life without hope of parole. Please understand the America you live in. There's no rugged individualism, and all this BS from the National Rifle Association or the Gun Owners of America and all that. We need our Second Amendment rights so we can rise up against the government just like the Patriots did in 1776. Is a bunch of garbage. I got shotguns. I got hunting rifles. I got a hunting rifle with a 4.5 by 14 scope on it that you can take down a deer at 400 yards with a 300 mag. I got handguns. I got buddies with grenade launchers. Guess what? When they come through the door, all your Second Amendment rights are for nothing, because if they want you, they will take you dead or alive. Every single citizen of the United States has on his or her head a wanted dead or alive poster that can be activated at the will of the government, the police forces, the military. And it is shameless wishful thinking to think that it is anything otherwise. You want armed revolution? Most of us have no idea what armed revolution looks like. Get down and dirty and find out what life in Gaza and the occupied territories is like, and you'll have a pretty good idea. Where the water runs once in a while, where sewage flows in the street, where food, you know, where dinner one some night is the garbage from the night before. Look at Baghdad. Look at Kabul. Okay. So, you know, this is free speech radio. And I'm not impinging anybody's right to free speech. But when you talk about who you're going to shoot and who's going to get shot and locking and loading and going for the ammo boxes, you're talking about something that most of America is not willing to contemplate, and most of us cannot even comprehend. Please remember that during the American Revolution, which we just celebrated, less than something on the order of 30% of the people supported it. They just wanted to be left the hell alone. They didn't care if they had a king or a president or a duke or a baron. They just wanted to be left alone. That applies to some of my forebears who kept going west until they got up a holler somewhere where they thought maybe nobody would finally find them. Because those Kincaid boys were illegal aliens from the get-go, on the run from the English, for having supported armed revolution. Didn't work out so well for them. Jesus, let's go to the phones. Kate. Hey, Kate, calling from Arizona. How are you, darling?
Hey, Kate. I'm Kate. You're Bob. I only have one phone tonight, so I feel like I'm slipping into the stream, and I'm not really sure where I'm at. But, ooh, you sound so butch with all those guns.
God.
Funny. No wonder you won that Purple Dragon. That was shooting fish.
Yeah, I was doing the whole Alvin York with the thumb on the tongue and with the front sight. There goes another styrofoam cup.
God. I started researching that story about the man being put off the train in Williams, and because I used to live in Williams just a little bit ago, about 3 or 4 years ago, and some of the stuff that was being reported, that you were re-reporting, sounded so, I just had to go in and look at it. For one thing, what should have been big news in that whole story was the train. Somebody said, at 10 o'clock at night. Well, the big story there, as soon as I heard that, I went, God damn, the train was only due at 9:30. That westbound is usually about 3 or 4 hours late. That should have been the big news in the story, but anyway, I digress. I know you and Wayne had a bad experience with the dining car.
It wasn't just with the dining car. It was with the whole train.
I know, but I had... And what train were you on that was... You were heading to Cleveland or something?
It was the Cardinal.
Oh, okay. Well, I've been on north and south and east and west and New Orleans, and I'm a train rider, and I have sat at many cross sidings and waited for them to put a medical emergency or disturbance or whatever off the train. The conductor, for sure, and oftentimes a car attendant or two will come on, will stay with, they're in charge of the whole process. They put the man, probably what happened is that they put the guy off, and 800,000 square miles of forest, well, the whole goddamn north of Arizona is national forest.
Right.
Okay. Jesus. And the sheriff, deputy, lieutenant, somebody said, they're at 8,000 feet. No, it isn't 8,000 feet there. The Grand Canyon South Rim is only 7. It's 65, about 65 in Williams. It is not an abandoned crossing. It's the Williams Junction. It's the regular stop on the railroad. Probably what happened is he was rowdy for whatever reason, and when they stopped in Flagstaff for it's about a half an hour stop, they probably phoned the sheriff's department, and they said, we'll bring him on into Williams, and we'll pick him up there because we've got cars closer there, okay? It's about a 25-minute ride down to Williams. They put his luggage off on the platform, and probably the other passengers going to the Grand Canyon disembarked too. It's a very large, well-lit parking lot, and it's not an abandoned crossing. The train does not go down into Williams anymore because the Grand Canyon Railroad come in and took over the spur, so they don't even stop at the railroad at the depot. Well, there's not even a train station here. Well, that's because the Grand Canyon Railroad took over the business. So the train has to stop on that new stop there up at, called Williams Junction. It's due in at 9:30. Yeah, it's at 6,500 feet, but that's where the train track is. You know?
Well, yeah, I mean, and, the train goes where the train goes. It's not an airplane. The train goes where the train goes. It's not an airplane.
As trains go, they go through the forest, and they go through 6,500 feet. And the thing that was, so I'm just kind of in defense of Amtrak and all the trouble they have. I mean, people were, and even the, I wonder
what constitutes getting rowdy, because I'm going to ride the train again. I'm going to give them a second chance. I wish I knew where the cutoff line was. This guy apparently, according to the story, was having some sort of diabetic problem. Of course, I don't know. You know, some people might get a little cranky at being 3 or 4 hours late,
but if they didn't know that. The train wasn't. You could probably get away with that because we're late. Yeah, trains are always.
But I would be a cranky white guy, Kate.
Well, I know. I understand the rate, and I'm not defending anything that happened, and I understand racism and all that, and rowdy, and probably, and if he was going into a diabetic shock, he would have been lethargic and fallen over and passing out and stuff. If he had enough energy to, and then when he got off of the train, they stood there and waited. The cops came up, and he split, and then they did a limited search for him. Then the story gets a little bit weird because he made his telephone had a Litchfield Park number, whether he called them or used it in Litchfield Park or whatever happened. That's way down here in Phoenix. So I'm thinking he got off the train, he walked down into Williams because it's pretty close to the highway, caught a ride to Phoenix, got down here and did whatever he did and got rolled or something, and it got dumped back off up at the, this is pure speculation on my part, but the fact that there was a Litchfield Park phone usage in his cell phone, and then 4 days later he's found 2 miles from where, no, I'm sorry, there's something way bigger going on here, but I just wanted to say Amtrak does not put people off in abandoned crossings in national forests at 10 o'clock at night.
God, I should hope not.
No, they don't, and I just wanted to.
Well, you know, that's. I mean, there were stuff about the story that was that seemed rather incongruous.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that based on what I had experienced, Kate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I wondered. I mean, everybody was very well behaved on the Cardinal. We were mostly too beaten, bedraggled, and exhausted to be otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Because among other things, and I've never told the train story. The fact of the matter was, the sleeping car that we were in, had completely busted suspension.
Yeah.
It has a
flat tire on one side. Yeah.
No, based on what I got from the conductor, it was worse than that.
Yeah.
Because every time we hit a crossing, the entire car would bottom out against the axles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ooh. It was like
spine compression every, you know, 15 or 20 minutes, and you thought you were going to die. to the point that it was so bad that they had actually changed out sleeper cars by the time that we got on it to come home.
Yeah.
And, you know, it left the station 45 minutes, an hour and 45 minutes late.
Right.
We kept making mad little sprints up to the Union Station bar to have a beer, you know,
and
hope it doesn't leave without us. And we'd run back and sit around for 15. It ain't going anywhere. Let's go get another one.
Yeah, tonight on a slow news night, you should have people call in with train stories. Oh, my God. But it's not all Amtrak's fault.
Well, no, it's not.
They're late is because Burlington Northern and Southern Pacific and all those big boys, the CMX and all those people, the coal companies, have bought out the tracks, and Amtrak is just like a red-headed stepchild.
Amtrak is literally a renter.
Mm-hmm.
Amtrak is at sufferance
to the
freight companies, and it was explained to us, as long as Amtrak runs on time, then they have the right-of-way. the minute that Amtrak gets 1 minute behind schedule,
mm-hmm.
then all the freight companies
mm-hmm.
get, what shall we say, pride of place.
Right. We have to pull over to the side and let the freight trains come through. And that sometimes the train is, because there's only one track, sometimes the train is 25 miles away. So Amtrak has to pull over, wait for the train to the pass the freight to go by, and then we can go back out on the track. And the reason, a lot of the times, the tracks are so badly kept that they're coming down through the trace from Chicago to New Orleans. There's where down through where it's real wet. I'm just sometimes that track is God Almighty. That's so rough. Oh.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Well, see, that's the other side of it. And Kate, by the way, thank you for pulling me away from my funk. I appreciate it.
Well, I didn't know what I was doing. I just called.
No, you're doing a lovely job. Thank you.
I had to unplug this phone
This is called pulling Bob off the ledge. Okay.
Oh,
and I sincerely appreciate it.
I don't want that damn responsibility.
Well, no. Yeah,
you get out on the ledge, honey. You get back in on your own.
Well, no, you helped this time.
Well, I just wanted to defend Amtrak, and I wanted, okay, the point, I guess this sort of ties into, I never listened to a whole George Bush thing, and I had to just shut it off because he makes me want to throw up and take a shower and stuff. When he gets into that, you kept going Sig Heil thing. That's so frightening to me because you said no place but in West Virginia could he get no bullshit. He can get that rowdy kind of fervor pitch. He could get that in Arizona. I have people.
Well, on most military bases, I tend to agree. But it was the content. It was the stuff it's the stuff that he hasn't said for 6 or 9 or 12 months.
I know. Yeah.
And he comes here and they drag it all out like, oh, well, you know, they live so far up the holler, they ain't heard this one yet.
And I heard somebody reporting about the woman who was sending thanks back to her family from Iraq and 4th of July, and we're proud to be over here fighting for your freedom. And people believe that. People believe that.
You know, that's one of those phrases. That's one of those phrases I just will not tolerate anymore. I'll look guys who have been there in the eye and say, listen, you can say that to yourself if it helps you to sleep at night, but you are not fighting for my freedom, Buster,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
because no Iraqi is a threat to my freedom.
No. So that whole German kind of Hitler-esque kind of stuff, it's so frightening because it's so easy to buy into. And people get into that fervor, and it's because we're so, somebody's afraid, I don't know of what, but, I mean, it's just so, it's not just in West Virginia that he could get away with that, so I just thought I'd throw that out. But I really, how this all ties, there must be a way to tie this thread together, is about news, about reporting. The elevation, it sounds awful. At 8,000 feet, well, some reporter just misquoted the cop or didn't research the story. The police officer was way out of line saying nobody should ever be put off of the train at 10 o'clock at night out in the middle of the national forest. If he said that, now I've been misquoted before, and I think, oh, this is going to be a nice story.
That's probably a factual statement. It is factual that no one should ever be put off a train at 10 o'clock in the middle of a national forest at 6,000 or 8,000 feet altitude. That's a true statement. No one should. Apparently no one did.
Exactly. That's why. So I'm just talking about reporting facts as facts go, as bad research, bad reporting, bad writing, putting the preposition in the wrong place, making a prepositional phrase when it shouldn't have been, you know, whatever. Just the way people, and it just makes me think.
Oh, we have journalism class here from time to time because, you know, the internet, the Google, opens up bad journalism to the entire world's review. And it is there in abundance, Kate.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, incredibly bad writing.
Right. And so when politicians talk and, I just can't believe anything until I go and see it myself. I even called my friend up in Williams and I said, what's up with Mr. Sims? And she said, oh, I don't know. They found him. And I said, oh, that's all the further you're going to go. Yep, for now, I got to go open the restaurant. So there was something else going on there we're not maybe ever going to hear, but I wanted to get the straight scoop from the person who knows all the gossip in Coconino County in Williams, and she wouldn't talk, and I thought, oh, shit. Oops, that's a word. That's a George Carlin word. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. We don't even use the dump button anymore, Kate.
Oh, anyway, so I just want to get out of here and let somebody else call in, but I just thank you for you. I'm glad you guys had a good day off, and thank you. Slow news day must be a slow news day. All we're hearing on the radio today, I took my friend into Phoenix to the doctor, and on coming back, all we heard on national news was, oh, it's 112 in Phoenix. And I said, why the hell are they saying that? It's 112 every friggin' day here. What is up with this? Oh, well, maybe. I'm grateful that they're pushing the high temperatures all over the West kind of thing to get into people's minds that it's not global warming, it's climate change.
Yeah, it's
not
you know,
global
that's just,
warming,
it's climate
change.
It's 116 in Las Vegas. That's what I saw on the CNN website.
I mean,
it's Las Vegas. It's supposed to be 100. No.
It is, and it's probably going to be a little warmer on the desert. No, it's going to be 132 in Death Valley. That's what summer's about. And then we're going to get the monsoons, and it's going to be 112 and 78% humidity and rain all afternoon and then wind all night. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, oh, God, slow news day for sure.
Well, they're easing us into August. August is, there's a reason. The government goes on vacation in August. Everybody goes on vacation in August. And frankly, if I could, I would too, because I will be sitting here tying balloon animals behind the microphone, trying to come up with something to talk about in August.
Oh, well, honey, you just open up the mics. We'll take care of that. You just tell us what you need. You just say, this is a slow news day. I've got nothing, and then watch what happens.
One of these nights, I'm going to let you guys just take over the show completely.
I think that's a good idea. And let Agnes moderate, and you tie animal balloons and shoot cork things, you know, whatever, and entertain the grandkid and, you know, whatever. And
watch me do this with the mirror over my shoulder.
Just open up the mic. Somebody said the other night, somebody said they asked listeners to email, somebody on Head On, I think, asked listeners to email. Who was that? And he got emails from all over the world.
Oh, that was probably Joe Vecchio.
Oh, it was. Oh, right, it was. And I don't listen to him because that's the wrong time of day for me.
Right.
That would just be very cool if people would just email you just with the, because I shortwave too, and I love writing people and saying, oh, I'm in at 112 west, 134 north. Degrees, whatever, and picked you up at, you know, on so many.
It is fun, and I Joe gets them, I get them, everybody on this network gets those emails, and it's
good.
A blast.
It's
nice to know that you're being heard in Finland. It's nice to know that you're being listened to in Germany. We don't have enough. The wall's not wide enough here, so our map of the United States is vertical instead of horizontal. But we've got little push pins all over the map and we're in all 50 states.
Yeah.
Liberals, progressives, decent people are all over this country, and you know, part and parcel of what we're doing, Kate, and you already know this, is to try to close the gap between us and make people feel less isolated than what has been imposed on them by both the political and the journalism process, so-called journalism process.
Mm-hmm. When you get the next time you get an out of state, out of country email, just mention it. Like, oh, heard from Hans in Finland today.
Yeah, I will
do that because I think that's interesting. And as the listenership gets up, then I think people are getting more involved and.
Well, I mean, I'm looking in the chat room right now. Our good friend Ibid is listening in Australia.
Oh, cool! Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, that chat room's a little high tech for me. I didn't even know what TY meant until 2 days ago. So.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, there's a whole shorthand there, some of which I still don't comprehend.
Yeah, and I said I just talk a little slower and I think a little. I just don't.
Oh, when the room's really fun and people are going at it, that the chat screen just it goes like a stock ticker.
Mhm. Yeah. Well, I like to sit and ponder a little more. You know, I like to reread the paragraph.
I've been
old.
Known to do that.
Okay,
too.
I'm old, just like you, Bob. Let's give somebody else a chance to talk. I appreciate
okay,
it.
Okay, Kate. Thank you, dear.
Yep. You bet. Bye.
Bye now,
Agnes.
Love you.
Okay, and Susan calling from Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Just a thought. I'm great. Just a thought, even though I'm severely wrought about the net neutrality thing, but just a thought for those people who are getting even more wealth than I am. Before you start talking about throwing the baby out with the bathwater, consider how incredibly lucky this country was. Because when we had our first revolution in 1776, a revolution, once it started, is very easy to control. We could have ended up with the equivalent of Russia.
Yeah.
And Stalin.
Yeah, we could have, but
not a democracy. So, you know.
And those geniuses, and they were geniuses who it was.
Protest.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead, back up. Go ahead, say.
No, what we want to do is protest, scream our heads off, but do it all within the framework of the Constitution.
Right.
Still there?
Yeah, I'm right here. I don't disagree with anything you said, Susan, because you know, we talk about,
yeah.
I mean, I see people writing, you know, come revolution. You know what? They don't want a revolution. These are people who would march. Well, I don't know if they would or wouldn't. I was about to say these are people who would march in the street if their cable went out. Okay, revolution means the plumbing stops working. Mm-hmm. Revolution means that the water tap stops bringing water. The electricity doesn't come on. Old people die for no reason because there isn't
the
adequate ventilation.
Yeah.
You know,
starve.
People starve.
In the cities, yeah. It's not pretty, it's not nice, and you don't want it.
No, now you're a science fiction buff. You ever read a book called Where Late the Sweet Birds Sang? It's got a lot to do with cloning and things like that, but it presupposes a time in America when civilization collapses, Susan. And the only people who survive are these people who live in walled-off communities where they've got people on the walls picking off the, you know, it's a very, you know, a few years later we got again from Australia we got the Road Warrior series, and it's that same kind of apocalyptic vision. And the thing is, when revolution comes, that is what it looks like. Stuff does because stuff falls apart. You know, for all we talk about.
I haven't read.
Go ahead.
I haven't read that particular book, but I've read several that were exactly like that. You know, that started off with a post-apocalyptic event, and then you had the society that was trying to save itself from the hordes.
Yeah, and see. I don't know, but what we're in the middle of something like that right now, because they didn't hang signs in the Roman Republic saying Republic closed, Empire now open. The entire reign of Caesar Augustus was one in which he pretended to adhere to the outward forms of the Republic, but continued to concentrate power into his own hands. And by the time he was an old man and he was done, it was obvious that he would have to pass power on to someone else. In that instance being Tiberius. So that, you know, at no point in time did somebody stand up and say, well, you know, it's over. And we are ridiculously short-sighted, Susan, because we think that we live in this society and somebody's going to stand on the street corner and say, okay, it's quit being a republic now. Nobody changed the Constitution, but it's not a republic, it's an empire now. Well, I'm that guy. It is an empire now. The Constitution is largely a ceremonial document. And that's what makes the 4th of July so hard to swallow.
Right, it's like Topsy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I didn't. I just basically sat around and was depressed. But, you know, the thing that bothers me. Oh, and by the way, there is someplace else where George could go. And anywhere in that particular state and get exactly the same audience he got in West Virginia.
Where's that?
Idaho.
Well, yeah, okay.
Idaho.
Sure.
I ought to know. Those rednecks love him to death.
But there are, and that's the thing. The idea for the 4th of July was to find a pocket of people, a pocket of 26 percenters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and those poor people in that hangar in Martinsburg had no choice but to buy into his crap because it's the only thing that stands between them and understanding that they are screwed.
Yeah.
And it's heartbreaking. My heart breaks for them. Those are my fellow West Virginians. And they are being used and abused and toyed with and played with. And see, that you know, George won't come to visit them when the butcher's bill is due.
No. No.
George won't come visit them when their spouses are screaming in the night. George won't come do when a swarthy-looking cabbie looks over from the next car over and the dude starts flipping out behind his own wheel. George won't come then, Susan.
Yep. Because he's the ultimate coward.
And he's also the ultimate uncaring SOB.
That's true, too.
Susan, hang in there, dear. Thank you so much.
You take care, and you hang in there, and this too shall pass.
I know. It just bugs me.
We can at least hope, anyway.
Yeah, we'll keep our fingers crossed.
My love to Agnes.
And you as well. Hey
bye
to Donald.
Bye,
bye now. And to across the pond, our good friend Andy calling in from the UK. Hey, Andy.
Hey, Bob. How's it going?
A little flustered.
Yeah. Well, given everything that's been happening in the US recently, I'm not surprised. I still haven't got over the Scooter Libby thing.
Oh, no. And the thing is, I don't think any right-thinking human being shouldn't be getting over the Scooter Libby thing anytime soon.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, you know, was I convinced Bush would either commute his sentence or pardon him? Oh, of course he was. Did I think he'd do it after 5 hours? Hell no.
Yeah, that was
that's
a little...
Brass balls, man. Really, really big brass balls.
Although, I must admit, you know, I'm not one to sit here and talk about what a prophet I am, but it turns out that little blog post that I wrote was largely correct because Judge Reggie B. Walton has scheduled a hearing on Scooter's supervised release.
Mm.
And it caused a little bit of a stink amongst the Johnny-on-the-spot White House press corps today, Andy.
Well, because they're all complicit.
Sure.
They're all criminals, too. I mean, not every single one, possibly, but if you look at all the main channels, CNN, Fox, ABC, all of their people in the press corps are all criminals. They're all part of this. I mean, look, you know, we constantly underestimate the amount of money the CIA and people like that are willing to spend to keep us all confused. I mean, you know, why do you have a cocaine trade so people like the CIA can afford to run operations like CNN and other things? Because it costs a lot to keep people bribed.
It does indeed.
And, you know, Wolf Blitzer, if he's not CIA, then he's Mossad. I mean, have you ever heard him say anything that was even remotely critical of Israel?
Oh, no.
And have you ever heard him do anything except try and jokingly push off Jack Cafferty's statements about the Bush regime?
Yeah, we'll talk to you next hour, Jack.
Mm, exactly. You know, this guy's a fully paid-up member of the ruling class propaganda team. I mean, Joseph Goebbels, he isn't, but a member of Joseph Goebbels' team, he would have been. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
His problem was he's Jewish, but...
Well, that makes it a little bit more disturbing, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, look at what the Jews are now. I mean, not every Jew, but Israel today is openly fascist towards the Palestinians.
Certainly
it is. Not even people compared to the Jews. Do you know what I mean? And there's sound political reasons they choose to be like that, but I don't like their reasons.
And that's why I was talking about this business with revolution and so forth. Take a hard look at the occupied territories and then tell me you want revolution. Because that's what revolution looks like.
No. I mean, revolution, the problem is we mix the sort of coups and revolutions. Because a revolution is a popular uprising. 1917, February 1917, that's a populist uprising. That's where everybody goes, stuff this, we're not doing it anymore. And that is actually a fairly peaceful thing, like it was, because nobody wants to have a fight. They all just want it to change. And the people in the army don't want to fight because they don't want to, you know, shoot their own civilians and possibly their mother. You know, so it all turns out like that. But what we keep being told is that coups, military coups, financed generally by the CIA and the NSA and people like that, they're revolutions. You know, it's like Hugo Chavez. They tried to depose him with a revolution. It wasn't a revolution. It was a coup. Yeah?
Yeah.
And this is the thing. Coups cause civil wars because somebody tries to take control. The other people aren't popularly supporting it. Civil war. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
The revolution in America, that was much more like the October Revolution. You know, a few people got together and stimulated it, and there was a populist uprising, although it could have gone either way in the States. It wasn't quite as clear-cut as the Russian one.
And I was reminded by email that after the battle of... after the revolution was at its end here, that about 20% of the population, or about 100,000 people who lived in the colonists who had been loyal to the crown, packed up and left. They either went to Canada or they went back to England.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why you didn't have an ongoing civil war, because, you know, it was just easier for them to just go somewhere else. I mean, if you wanted to stay as a settler, then Canada had plenty of room. But this situation isn't open to people who might possibly have revolutions nowadays or in various crowded areas of the world. I mean, you know, the whole Palestinian situation, it's ridiculous. You know, Hamas, evil, horrible terrorist organization, can't deal with them. Well, we shouldn't have asked for a democratic election then, should we? Because they've been democratically elected. Oh, we don't like the way they dealt with Fatah. Well, that's
well,
the way Fatah and Hamas have been dealing with each other since X.
But, Andy, the United States isn't much interested in democracy because the United States does not engage in it either.
Well, no, the United States isn't at all about democracy. The United States is about militaristic power and control. I mean, the fascists won the Second World War when you look at it in the long view.
Well, they absolutely did. The other thing about democracy, though, Andy, is... I don't know if some political theorist has finalized it in some sort of cognizable form, but there should be something said about democracy, and bear in mind, I like the idea in general, but from the moment of its invention forward, there have been a lot of people who thought it was a really rotten way to run a government.
Well, yeah, all the people who owned slaves, for a start.
Yeah, or, you know, I mean, Plato had a hard-on for democracy because they killed his teacher and his best friend, Socrates. I mean, that was the Athenian democracy at work. Socrates was accused of corrupting the youth and teaching false religious doctrine, and he got a cup of hemlock out of it.
Well,
and,
yeah, their democracy was hardly perfect.
No democracy can be.
Well, maybe it can at some point.
But it works on what I'm wondering is whether it should be noted that democracy works best and most nicely on a small scale. You know, it's great for town hall meetings in Vermont. It's not so it's not that it's not good, but it is utterly unable to function as such for running the better part of an entire continent.
Well, that's debatable. I mean, here's the problem. Look, we have a conflation between democracy and capitalism, and the conflation is that democracy equals capitalism, and the problem, of course, is that capitalism always wants to destroy and control democracy. So our problem is not democracy. Our problem is, as ever, capitalism. Okay? And that doesn't mean let's get rid of money and let's all become communists or whatever the hell a communist means. Not that it means anything, you know.
We'll make love beads and live in the sunshine. No.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. You know, people go on about how, oh, that's Marxist. Well, I'm sorry, but reality is Marxist. You know, I can't help the fact that reality is the way it is.
Well, and by the same token, capitalism is not a political structure. Capitalism is an economic structure. Democracy is a political structure.
Well, yeah, I mean, our problem is we've gone from taking capital as a system of exchange to taking capital as a system of power. Because when it was just a matter of...
Don't forget the religion, Andy.
Well, the religion's a whole other thing.
I mean, capitalism is a religion.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, money's always been a religion to a certain percentage of every population. And this is what we need to stop. We need to put in place rules that prevent this. I mean, do you know how much... tax a billionaire in Britain pays.
Tell me.
As a percentage, they're supposed to pay 17. Now, my father was a very high up member of the British government in the civil service, and he had to pay 49% in tax. Okay? And he earned £100,000 a year. Okay?
Okay.
And these billionaires are earning hundreds of millions or billions a year, and they're supposed to pay 17. Of course, the vast majority of them don't pay a penny. Now, as bad as that is, it's worse where you are, man.
Sure it
is. Much worse.
It is possible to pay almost nothing.
Well, no, I mean, a lot of the top people, the Rockefellers and the Morgans and the Rothschilds, though I don't get shouted out for not including the European bloody family as well. Yeah, this is the problem with the left. There's always someone who's going to have a go at you for whatever you say.
Hey, dude, I live here. I mean, yeah, I know.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, it's like whenever you have a group of people trying to do something to make a change, you start to achieve actual numbers and start to achieve change, and there'll be a small group of the original group going, oh, I preferred it when there were only six of us.
Yeah,
we are, we're leftists.
Yeah, the vocabulary for that now, I guess, in the blogosphere, Joe Vecchio introduced me to this, Andy.
Mm.
Those are called concern trolls. Oh, we're concerned that you're being very irresponsible.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, the problem, of course, with the blogosphere and that is that a lot of those people are actually operatives of the other side. I mean, you know, it's like Atrios and Daily Cast. I don't trust those sites because what they say is too close to the Democratic Party line. They won't talk about issues. They won't let people talk about the issues they want to talk about on their blogs, and yet they project themselves as free, open sources of discussion. You know, come here, talk about what you want. Well, I'm not allowed to talk about 9/11 if I go to Daily Coast. And excuse me, but everything that's going on right now in Iraq is all hinges on 9/11. So well, whether or not you believe there was any problem with 9/11...
9/11 is the birth mother of Iraq. I don't think you've got to engage in any wild-eyed stuff to see that.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I'm not engaging in anything.
No, George Bush is still giving speeches, as obviated from what I just played, saying that very thing.
Yeah, but you're not allowed to talk about it on some of the leading Democratic, allegedly, left-wing, allegedly, sites. And this is why I don't trust a lot of them. You know, you can't trust all of them. Because there are people out there who are getting paid very well, super rich, to make sure that we continually keep at each other's throats.
And there are people who are using those kinds of sites, Andy, let's be quite honest about things, to try to become the super rich.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, I don't mind saying it. I mean, anybody can go and look at blog ads and find out what Daily Coast, for instance, is charging for an ad, okay? $9,000 for one ad on Daily Coast for one day.
Yeah. I mean, they Daily Coast is the only one I can think of right now. I mean, I think Atrius is a bit bad too, but Daily Coast is the number one suspect. I mean, this guy is not doing it because he believes in politics. This guy is not doing it because he believes in liberalism. This guy's doing it because he wants the money. And that scares me, you know. I mean, he's the same as the rest of the corporations. He's just smaller. You know what I mean?
But trying to get up there to play with the big fish, and you know, there's some ego stuff that goes with it. I ran across an article in Time magazine. Yeah, not that I call that journalism or anything. Don't misunderstand.
No.
But from Amy, what's her name, who started out the blog site Wonkat.
Oh yeah.
Talking about going on the Imus show back then. This was, I think this was an old copy of Time that we stole from a doctor's waiting room or something. But it goes back to the Imus thing. And she said, you know, the only reason I was going on Imus was because of the prestige and the exposure that I got out of it.
Yeah, for being on with a racist.
Yeah, and she said, you know, and I overlooked the obvious nastiness of Don Imus and his black jokes and his Jewish jokes and...
Yeah, well, it's easy enough for her to say afterwards, isn't it?
Well, exactly. And that was the thing I was reflecting on as I read it, was that, you know, well, now that you're among the glitterati, that's very well and good for you to look back and say, well, you know, I did it a little dirty.
Yeah. Well, you know, look at how the Bush family got to where they are. Treason, treachery, consorting with fascists, assisting in the mass murder of Jews.
Sure. Now financing the company that made the Zyklon B, sure.
Yeah, and now assisting in the mass murder of, Americans in September the 11th, 2001, and Afghans and, you know, Iraqis and probably Iranians next, because let's forget, Iran has the next biggest source of untapped oil after Iraq.
Well, do they? The general principle I don't take issue with, but they reached peak oil in what, 1973?
No, peak oil they didn't. They reached peak production because they weren't able to build any more refineries.
Oh, okay. That makes sense then, because part of the reason for the riots in the street in the last two weeks was because Iran, for all the oil they produce, they don't have one refinery.
Yeah, because the U.S. has made sure they're not allowed to have the equipment off the Western oil company.
Right, at the same time.
Which, of course, is paid for by Western taxpayers and handed free to the Western oil company.
Yeah.
I mean, look, we live in a fascist world. This is it. Anybody that disagrees with that statement, then fair enough, open your damn eyes.
Yeah.
And I would have used a different word there, but I'm trying to not put myself down in the eyes of Agnes and other
people. She loves you, don't worry, you're in
fascist
good.
World. Fascism is the melding of corporate and state power, and the U.S. has melded corporate and state power for so long now that, you know, I mean, when Eisenhower left and did that speech...
Yeah, the military-industrial complex.
Speech, Eisenhower was doing the speech to cover his own arse and salve his conscience. It's the same as people who pray for someone when they're ill. You're just doing it to make yourself feel better. He had already sold you down the river. He didn't.
Yeah, it would have been a different. It would have been a different speech if he had delivered it on his inauguration in January 1952.
Well, that's the thing. He did during his time in power. He created the situation that allowed the military-industrial complex to continue. He could have shut it all down. And more so, he had the popular support, having apparently won the war on his own. He had popular support to do that, but he didn't. And why didn't he? Because he was well paid.
Sure. After the that's accessory after the fact, basically, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now I watched a very interesting film. Our good friend Angie over at PBSblog.com, PBSblog.com has boodles of wonderful, wonderful movies you can watch there.
Yeah.
And I watched one called Zeitgeist, Andy.
Right.
And it's basically it's a play in three acts, if you will. Mm-hmm. It is Christianity, 9/11,
yeah,
and the Federal Reserve. Now, some of it I find disturbing because I'm fairly familiar, and I'm sure you've read it as well, the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion.
Yeah.
And, you know, that thing was written by the secret police of the Tsar and took hold among anybody who was looking for a reason to hate the Jews.
Yeah.
There were parts of this film that I looked up and went, oh, Jesus, it's high-tech and repackaged Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion.
Mm-hmm.
And but see, I know these things, so I can filter as I watch, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were other parts of this film that just sort of grabbed you by the throat and went, you know, pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that has to do with the way that we do allow ourselves to be manipulated, whether it's the currency, whether it's the backing of the currency, whether it is I don't think there's any way to buy into all of the theories, and I won't use the C word in front of it, all of the theories pertaining to 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are more questions than answers. I don't think that. I know that.
Well, here's the thing. There's no such thing as a theory about 9/11. Here's the fact. Steel doesn't melt with kerosene. Steel doesn't melt with kerosene under laboratory conditions, let alone under some plane crashing into some building up high with less oxygen and higher wind. So that's just a fact. So
well, I'm more disturbed in the long run, and this was part of that segment of the film that got me, with the things that were incident to it, the stand down, the question of whether Cheney was or was not in control of the military.
No, you can't answer those questions because those questions are sealed up by people who will be shot dead if they answer the questions, and they know that.
Well, look, I mean, I've mentioned this before, and I'm never going to give the guy's name out. I haven't heard from him in over a year. He was one of my best friends in the world. He has disappeared off the planet. I cannot reach him anymore. This guy was watching a scope when the plane went down in Shanksville, PA, and I asked him point blank, did they shoot it down?
Hmm.
I don't hear from him anymore.
No, well, then he's probably in a ditch somewhere. I mean, you know, killing people is not beyond these bastards. I mean, you know, if you or I, Bob, or Agnes, or your children get to a point where we're considered too dangerous, then they'll come and kill us. Okay, that's how they work. They don't see anyone as truly human, okay, apart from themselves, and that's the ruling class. Okay?
Well, Joe Vecchio has said that. He said that point blank the other day. We are not human to them.
Have you not read the writings that these people follow? I mean, you know, the Thule Society, have you heard of that?
Yeah, I have.
Hitler was a member. Yeah, well, the writings of the Thule Society are the basis of the Skull and Bone Society's teaching. Now, Bush and Kerry were both Skull and Bones. What are the chances of two guys from the same year of Skull and Bones being up for office at the same time? You know, all of these questions link together. You don't have to have a theory. You just have to look at a fact, and it links to another fact, and it links to another fact, and it looks damn suspicious. There's no theory there, you know. Here's the thing, you know, people who are in Skull and Bones admit that the Thule Society and other Satanist madness is what they base their stuff on. Well, John Kerry and George Bush were both in that society. So what's going on with your democracy? Do you know what I mean? Look, at the other connections. Look at the Bilderberg Group. Isn't it amazing? Some unknown governor from Arkansas is seen at a Bilderberg Group one year, and then suddenly, 1992, Bill Clinton becomes president. Who the hell had heard of Bill Clinton before then? Look at the other connections. You know, John Major, seen at the Bilderberg Group, suddenly gets promoted all the way through the Conservative Party and becomes Prime Minister of Britain. Tony Blair is seen at the Bilderberg Group meeting.
And it's not like these people don't exist. I mean, the Bilderberg Group does exist. The Bohemian Group, the Bohemian Grove thing does exist.
Yeah, the Carlyle Group does exist.
The Carlyle Group is very, very real.
Yeah. And they hide themselves.
But when you, and the problem, though, is that when you go into this stuff, after a while, you feel like you've spent a night in the funhouse. Or in the House of Mirrors.
Well, you know, there's one reason why Alex Jones sounds crazy. It's because he half is. The poor guy's going nuts. Do you know what I mean? And I don't blame him. He knows so much more about this stuff than I do, and I feel crazy sometimes when you think about it.
I know.
Because it's nuts. And the reason it's nuts is because these people are... Sorry, I was about to say it. These people are psychos.
And we know what kind of psychos. Yes, they are.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know how you get there. I was raised differently, I guess, or I just come from an the whole archetype behind who I am is wildly different from these kind of people, because if you... I mean, you say, you know, that they'd kill. I can't, look, if I knew for a fact that there was a crazy guy in a jumbo jet looking to kill 3,000 people, and I had to make a call, either shoot down that plane and the 200 people in it, or let 3,000 people die, I would dread having, I can't imagine what it would be like to have to make that decision, but I can guarantee you one thing, Andy.
Mm-hmm.
After the decision was made and after it was done, the way I am is that you stand up and you say, this is the decision I made, this is the choice I reached, here are the facts I used in reaching that decision, for good or ill, it is mine. And to a certain extent, you know, John Kennedy did that after the Bay of Pigs when he said, success has a million parents, failure is an orphan.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's so disgusting about these people in Washington now, as far as the Bush administration is concerned. They know they've failed. They know they've screwed up.
Well, they haven't, though. This is what they intended to do, Bob.
I get it, Andy. They meant to do all this, but they never considered the ramifications and they never considered the consequences, because this is the end game of this is not what they wanted.
No, the end game of this is exactly what they want. They don't give a good goddamn about the consequences, Bob, because you know who will take them? You, me, and everyone else who's not a member of the ruling class. They're not going to get blown up by the terrorist organizations that hate us because of what they've done to their work countries. They're not going to get blown up by them because they are rarely seen by us. We're the people who get targeted by terrorists because we allow these ruling class people. In many ways, the terrorist groups that hate us see it a lot more clearly than us. We're the only people that can stop the ruling class, the people of the West. They can't. These poor bastards in the Middle East can't do anything about it.
No, but Andy, if the world goes up in a nuclear fireball, the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and the
they think their nuclear bunkers will protect them. They think they can live for years underground and build a new society in this.
Another group of these people who didn't realize Dr. Strangelove was a comedy,
yeah.
In other words.
Well, they're all completely nuts. They talk them to... Look, you know how conditioning works. It's not someone makes you think something. It's slowly your thought patterns adapt to what's going on around you. That's how humans grow and evolve. And these people consistently are surrounded by just themselves, people who consider them superior to everyone else. And so they all truly, truly believe that everything they plan is better than everything we plan. They think that they'll achieve what they will achieve, no matter what the consequences to anyone else. It doesn't matter to anyone else. In fact, they'd like to see us all dead, because then there'd be more room for them. They believe that wealth is a set sum.
If you catch some of them in their more private moments, Andy, they will tell you that that a time is coming when there will be a die-off in the world of some 3 or 4 billion people.
Well, what do you think AIDS is?
And
AIDS is one of their tools. I mean, look, let's be honest. AIDS is not a natural disease. The way it spread, the way it appeared across continents simultaneously, you know, if you look at how AIDS appeared, it's appearing, you know, the same...
Even if it's not manufactured, even if it did happen naturally, if one simply scientifically ignores it in the right way, it can do its dirty work.
Well, I think they went around spreading it to begin with, and so far, and since then, they've done what they can to keep it spreading. You know, the myth being spread about virgins curing AIDS. Well, that's just a method of spreading it, isn't it? the whole Catholic Church opposed. I mean, that Pope that was going to legitimize condoms and contraceptives suddenly died after 33 days in office, and then we got John Paul II. Remember that?
Yep.
Yeah, he was going to legitimize condoms as a prevention of STDs, and that would have knocked the whole AIDS thing right out of the park. Convenient, isn't it?
It's astonishing to ponder. It is.
Well, it's scary to ponder because, you know, could we do this to people? No, but we're not.
In a way, it's like it's sort of like a Calvinist predestination.
Yeah.
That we can't get around it. That we're trapped in this. I have a hard time getting my head around it, Andy, and I have a harder time making my heart believe it. I have to believe that human beings can change their circumstances.
Well, we can, but not while the ruling class are trying to destroy it. We've got to change that circumstance first. And, you know, look at the tools they use. Police aggression, they use terrorist attacks, false flag operations. I mean, just read their own manuals on false flag operations and then tell me you don't think 9/11 was an inside job.
Yeah, just read the manifesto of the Project for a New American Century. Believe me, I have read it cover to cover, and it's pretty horrifying.
Yeah.
And they write about it with such cool calculation that you just want to...
Yeah, you're going to have a shower afterwards.
Andy, so good to hear from you, my friend.
Me too, man. I'll speak to you again soon.
And best to Hazel.
I will be, thank you.
Bye now.
Take care, Mike. Bye.
A good friend, Andy, in the UK. Ben Birch. What's up, my brother?
Well, okay, I have to counter something Andy said.
Okay.
Okay. You know, I'm one of these people who, I believe that 9/11 was a setup, but not in the way everyone else thinks. You know, lots of people on our side, on the left, seem to think that World Trade Centers 1, 2, and 7 were chocked to the rafters with thermite bombs, and that's why they came down. But long ago, I computed what it would take to knock a skyscraper over and what the consequences would be when I investigated what would happen if the New Madrid Fault moved. This was back in the late 70s, early 80s. And I my physics was better back then because I was using it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I pretty much had, you know, I mean, 9/11, when those buildings fell, it wasn't a surprise to me. First of all, buildings don't have the kind of excess strength people seem to think they do. And those aircraft hitting it, the mass of those aircraft hitting it, did incredible damage to the skin of that building. And the skin of that building was a huge supporting member of the building. That building is unlike many other buildings where the frame supports the floors and the floors support the skin. Okay?
Yeah.
No, this was a central core and then a floor which was essentially a cantilever truss arch, you know, sort of a structure. You know, it was a truss. It was slightly arched because the steel was thinner in the middle and at the edges. And then the edge, the outer edge, was supported by the actual wall. Well, you know, when that wall was torn around, you know, torn into shreds on one side, and the number of the central supporting columns were taken out by the aircraft, there wasn't really a whole lot of hope that those buildings would stand. They certainly weren't repairable. And when I looked at them initially, when I looked at the damage on CNN before they fell, I said, those buildings are going to have to come down one way or the other. I didn't think they'd fall that morning, but I thought they were coming down.
Well, how do you respond? How do you respond to the because that's the thing with watching these films, like what I watched last night, the interview with the architect who says, you know, we engineered this thing for being able to be hit at any number of levels by a 707.
A 707 is a much smaller aircraft than a 757. Has much less fuel, is much less weight, and quite honestly, and I don't really think that building would have taken a 707. I don't really think he has that engineering right. There's a lot of things I think that weren't considered. They go through some very standard sorts of things to try to prevent buildings from being a problem if they're damaged like that. But nobody tests any of these assumptions.
And that's the thing. I don't have, and I think a lot of Americans who watch this stuff I walk into any 9/11 stuff, Ben, knowing that I have not been told the truth. Okay.
And here's the annoying thing. You're not going to be told the truth by the people who are putting together those films either. They have an agenda, and they're trying to push it. It ain't the truth. The truth is those buildings came down because they were hit by aircraft, and possibly...
What about the guys who are on camera from the Transit Authority or the cops or firefighters or whatever talking about, I was in the basement and I heard the explosions and then the planes hit?
My opinion is that we have got, first of all, had there been explosions 35 minutes before the planes hit, as people have alleged, there would have been a box alarm. The firemen would have been called. They weren't. The first anybody knew about it was when the North Tower got hit.
Okay, that makes sense.
There was no box alarm before that.
Okay, what do you say? Wait.
Had there been an explosion in the basement of the World Trade Center, it would have been on CNN within 15 minutes.
How do you respond to the people who say then, well, of course there was no box alarm. The box alarms had been disabled.
BS, because there were people all over the place with cell phones and cell phone cameras. Had there been an explosion in the basement of World Trade Center 1, as alleged? Actually, it's a shared basement. 1 and 2 share a basement underground.
Yeah, four or five or six levels, right?
Many levels, and there's an incredible amount of machinery in there. I have a film I'll show you sometime that I recorded off Discovery Channel and encoded with a horrible encoder I used to own. But the straw man argument that kerosene under laboratory conditions will not melt steel.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Okay. What about the fuel truck that burned in California on the bridge that melted the steel?
Well, exactly. And the other thing, precisely. And the other thing is, yeah, kerosene melts steel if you do it right. But even if you don't do it right, it weakens steel. Steel above like 500 degrees centigrade loses. If you take steel and you raise it to 500 degrees centigrade or above for a period of a few minutes, it starts changing internally and it weakens. And so you take a building that you've already weakened by knocking out support columns and ripping the skin such that now you've got floors hanging unsuspended in space from that central core, and you weaken things further with heat, and there's a recipe for disaster. We really don't need to Occam's razor. We don't need to invent thermite bombs of an unknown type. And, oh, by the way, the mass spectrometry that Professor Jones did to prove it was thermite shows nothing of the sort. I know how to read those. And it ain't thermite he's showing you there. And plus, he's taking it from three little globules of metal found in some chick's apartment 100 yards from ground zero after demolition was underway and there were all kinds of things being used on that site, including thermite to cut. So even if it had been thermite,
okay. Let me.
His result is meaningless. I mean, the man's a fraud.
Okay, you said a minute ago that these people have an agenda too.
Yeah, they want to bring down the Bush administration, and somehow prove that they are.
Well, I want to bring down the Bush administration.
I know, but they have gone past the point of being honest. They will tell any lie to bring down the Bush administration.
But lies won't do that. You can't fight.
Because I don't think I need to.
Well, the Bush administration lies, and you cannot defeat lies with more lies.
No, you can't. And what's more, Mark Levine and I had a long talk about this in the car when we were all in Chicago. You know, Mark and I agree on this. A lot of what you are seeing on these people who are pushing the World Trade Center conspiracy theories really hard have two motives. Three motives. One, they're the people who would lie and tell any lie or make up anything to bring down George Bush and the whole peanut crowd. Two, there are the people who see that there are people willing to pay money for stuff that caters to what they already believe, and so will produce any kind of book or material with any kind of, you know, falsehood in it they can just to sell it. And three, I think there's agitprop happening here. I think this is a COINTELPRO operation wherein we are being made to look foolish by people who are planning plausible stories and trying to get us to run with them so that they can embarrass us later.
Okay, Ben, there's a question that I had in my own mind that's been posted in the chat room as well. In this film that I watched, there's a segment where a guy who's a demolitions expert says, basically, when we want to take a building down, we cut the structural steel, and we do it this way, and he holds it up, and he's got a tape measure, and we cut it at an angle so that it'll blah, 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 blah. And then they cut immediately to a photograph of a piece of the steel core from the Trade Center, and it's cut on exactly that angle.
And I found a picture of that. And I found a picture of the demolition crew taking that piece apart to cut it into smaller pieces. And you know what they were doing? They were cutting it on an angle with a torch. That very piece that they present there, that very piece of steel, I have a picture of a guy up there on a ladder with a torch cutting it after the buildings fell during the demolition while they were cutting pieces down to size for removal. And you cut it at an angle at that point in time because you wanted the piece to slide off in that direction.
Well, what about, God, it's so important for things to actually make sense. Because you do wander down this and you feel like you're down a rabbit hole. And you don't, I mean, I'm not an engineer. I'm not a physicist. I'm not a scientist. I have a working brain that's pretty good at doping out stuff that stinks. And there's a lot of it that, you know, anybody watching one of these movies goes, yeah, that. And of course, any time that you do that, you wind up at Building 7.
Building 7, let me tell you three or four things about Building 7 that you really need to know. Number one is that Building 7 was hit by high-speed ejecta from the towers, from the aircraft that went through the both those hits were through and through hits. Pieces came out the other side, big heavy pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I wouldn't want to be anywhere near where those pieces fell because some of them are pretty massive. On the side of Building 7, you almost never see the smoky burning side. There was a gash down the entire front of that building that was ripped out. I mean, many floors long. Okay, from almost the top of the thing down to like the...
But the picture you always see is of this pristine building that looks untouched, and yeah, there's a couple of fires in the window.
Yeah, you're looking at the other side. When the firemen... In the afternoon, when the fire department went in there to look at Building 7, okay, remember they had no water pressure, they had many dead who were firemen, they were busy trying to find their own... So finally they got to Building 7, and they were going to put people in the building, and they looked at it, and they noticed that the building was bulging. And they went and they got a transit, and they sat there and they measured the building, the captain did, and he found out that the building was really bowed out badly on the side facing the plaza. And it was burning inside, and there were many, many things in there that could burn, including about 38,000 gallons of generator fuel, which was in a generator complex near the top of the building.
They put the generator complex on the top of the building?
Yeah, there was.
Okay, I'm no architect.
Exhaust gases can be dealt with.
Oh, okay, sure, makes sense.
You know, and where you can run the building equipment and et cetera. There were generators for several different, you know, there was like a fuel system running within that building, and there were holding tanks and reservoirs and, you know, little, and tanks for the various other, you know, there were several generators up there owned by various companies to run the emergency parts of their equipment within the building.
Yeah.
Okay? So we had a building that had this huge gash down the front, had all these fires going in it that were not being fought. There was no water pressure. There was the sprinkler system was useless after a few minutes. And it was bowing out. Plus, if you look at the way that Building 7 was designed, it had like a king post. It had like this one central beam that was like the support for most of the building. It was really very weirdly designed. I mean, it was strong enough. I'm sure it would have stood through an earthquake, but not once you rip out the front of it and damage that beam. I believe that the place where that rip occurred is pretty much where that beam would have been.
Well, the backside photo that you do get in these films shows, obviously there was a crease in a building just like you see in a building that is being demolished. Right in the center, and you can see in the photo that it's kind of making a little V shape in the roof, and that it's coming in on itself.
Yeah, that's because it failed. That's because that central supporting beam failed.
Well, let's back up for a minute, Ben.
And if you have a collapse, and if you're on the non-burnt, non-damaged side of the building, and what happens is the central post in the front of the building collapses and the floors start falling in on themselves from that side, kind of like, in some V shapes down and sliding forward out into the plaza area. Yeah, it's going to look like the whole thing fell down from the center on the clean side. It'd be like you pulled the building down. That's what happened. The building was pulled down by the weight of the collapsing stuff in front.
Okay, I want to back up a minute. Because I, you and I both know that this is a dangerous conversation.
Oh, I know it is. When I post on liberal boards my belief that the towers were not mined with explosive charges, that in fact that it would have been really impossible to mine them with explosive charges without people within them knowing, because building demolition usually involves the taking out of all interior walls,
mm-hmm.
and cutting into the concrete, that surrounds beams to get down to the bare metal. I mean, if you're going to use thermite, you got to be on bare metal, absolutely. And so the thing to understand is that it's a dangerous conversation. People hate me. They think I'm some kind of PNAC shill when I tell them no, the buildings were demolished by two airplanes hitting them.
Well, what I'm getting at is that some of us have invested a lot in this.
Right.
By us, I mean liberals, progressives, because you see, there is this much that is a starting place for everyone who has this discussion. And that starting place is the Bush administration is evil.
Oh, they are the most evil. I don't think Stalin was as evil as Bush.
And as such, they would be capable of doing something like this. And you
absolutely, but you know what they wouldn't be capable of? Keeping it a secret this long.
Okay.
Because it would have to be a conspiracy involving thousands of workers to have been the people who believe this was mined with explosive charges think it was done that weekend. There was like a period of time during which building power was cut off, and they think that the whole thing was mined on that weekend. No, it would have taken months to prepare that building. And there's no way that you could have kept the building maintenance engineers who didn't work for you from finding this stuff. Because, the World Trade Center was like completely, I mean, people were, maintenance guys were all over that place like flies.
Well, there's a reason. It's not just because, ooh, that's a big, tall building. There's lots of tall buildings in New York City. There was a reason that building complex was targeted by the planes. Okay?
Two reasons. Reason number one, because it's a symbol of New York City and America. Reason number two, and people don't understand this, most people seem to be unaware of this, that morning at 11 a.m., in the federal building on the other side of the plaza, in a courtroom, we were going to sentence the plotters, or at least one of the plotters from the original 1993 World Trade Center bombing. His sentencing was to occur that morning. That is why 9/11. That is why they picked that date.
Well, I know I'm going to catch a lot of hell for this discussion, and because we on this side, like I said, it's probably the most dangerous discussion we have. We can prove the evils of voting machines. I mean, it's been subjected to computer analysis. The players have been identified. You can show it with the hard numbers, and I think for the most part. Anybody with a rational mind understands now that the elections of 2000 and 2004, and quite frankly, the off-year elections of 2002 and to a certain extent 2006, were all stolen.
Absolutely.
The House majority should be a lot bigger than what it is.
We should have a firm Senate majority.
Right. On the other hand, this one just
proving any part of this is really hard. Understand that we don't need, you know, we can ignore it, even if those buildings were mined from inside, which I'd be willing to bet any amount of money they weren't. Even if we don't need that to bring down George Bush. And the reason is because George Bush told the FBI to take their hands off Bin Laden and all other Saudis.
That stuff is verifiable. You know, that's
Absolutely.
The little promo we've been running. That's the little promo that we've been running for a couple of weeks now. That didn't even make a ripple in the evening news. The unredacted documents now say the plane, the 727 that ferried all the Saudis out of America was chartered, and it just says it, either by the Saudi, and this is their word, not mine, royalty, either by the Saudi royalty family or Osama bin Laden. Okay? There's lots of stuff to know about this. There's lots of dirty stuff to know about this. What you mention is true. The FBI had been called off all examinations of the bin Laden family because they are, and this is verifiable, again, fact, the bin Ladens are tight business associations of Familia Bush.
Absolutely. And what's more, Bush knew this was coming. He had that presidential daily briefing that said, hey, we're going to be hit by bin Laden.
We were warned by Egypt. We were warned by Poland. We were warned by Israel. We were warned by France. We were warned by Russia. Okay?
And he deliberately did nothing. Those buildings didn't have to come down. The buildings that they fell at all was so incidental to this whole thing. Just crashing planes into them, even if they never fell, was just as effective. Absolutely, maybe even more effective to have these two, you know, jagged, burnt-out hulks sitting above New York City while it took 2 or 3 years to rip them down. That would have been more effective for bin Laden. That would have been more effective for Bush.
Okay, I'm looking at an email.
It's wholly incidental.
I'm looking at an email here, okay? And I don't want to create any bad feelings. I don't want to create any illness among what should be a tight-knit group. Part of the thing that I see, Ben, is that there is an argument that 9/11 should be reason enough to, and should have been 2 years ago, reason enough to impeach George Bush. But what also plays in for me is statements by people like Nancy Pelosi that impeachment has been taken off the table. You know what? The thing that drives me nuts, and we talk about it night after night on this program, is that there is nothing that will put impeachment on the table for Nancy Pelosi. If we wanted somebody, for whom impeachment would be on the table, then we need somebody besides, and God, this is hard to say, okay? We need somebody besides Nancy Pelosi, because Nancy Pelosi is not a wartime consigliere, all right? I'm looking at an email right here No, and this is what I get. No, the demolition crew took months to do this. Maintenance was in the building for a year doing work. Yes, they could keep the secret. They kept the Kennedy assassination a secret, and Bobby, and MLK, and Wellstone. You need more examples of them keeping a secret? Yes, we're under attack of a disinformation war perpetrated by the NSA against the people known as a PSYOP. PSYOPs is an agency of CIA, too. I agree we shouldn't be caught without our pants down, but simple logic says Cheney did this, 9/11. I watched them says this writer, Trojan nuclear tower, and it didn't take that long to wire it, a month or two, and that was a hardened tower.
Well, okay. I think that anybody who says that there were months of demolition prep done in that building, sorry to say it, that's a fantasy. Everybody who worked in that building would have known about it. There is just no way it could have been kept private the way the building was designed.
Well, okay, let's back up.
You couldn't get to all of those columns without people seeing you and without people noticing you were cutting into the columns on every single damn floor. It couldn't be done.
Okay, let's back up and take into account for a moment, Ben, the American character.
We don't notice what doesn't what bite us in the butt.
Yeah, we couldn't tell you the name of the if the plumbing goes out and a guy comes and fixes my plumbing 2 days later, I can't tell you the plumber's name.
Absolutely, but you don't need the thing is the building falling did not require explosives. You can prove by physics that it didn't.
What about
the kinetic energy in that building was equivalent to 250 gravitational potential energy, rather, it was equivalent to 250 tons of TNT. All of that energy was placed into that building back in the 1960s by the crane that hoisted up all the bits and pieces to put into the building. So all of the fuel that was expended to run those cranes, to lift all those pieces, all that energy was stored in the building. And as soon as the first little slump occurred, you don't need to even take out a whole floor. You just need to have the building slump a few inches.
And you can see that in the video. You can see that it tilts to one side before it... But
absolutely, that is not a controlled demolition when the whole top falls to one side. And, you know, people say, oh, it fell all straight down. No, it didn't. They say it fell at free fall rates. Nope. Free fall rates for that structure in air at that altitude, and you can compute the terminal velocity for a structure even that massive, would have caused the thing to fall in 11 seconds. By all accounts, everyone who's measured it says it's 15. So 11 versus 15, that's not free fall. That 4 seconds is significant. Plus, you know, it's entirely possible that we didn't see everything because we were outside and that the building was falling in its interior before it looked like it was falling in its exterior. Because of the way it's constructed.
Boy, I tell you, the email is flying in here.
I know it is, and I know everyone now thinks I'm some kind of George Bush shill.
No.
The truth is, George Bush caused 9/11 intentionally. He needed this event to cement his power and to create the war he wanted. And so he created it by allowing terrorist plots we already knew about to be finished. He paved the way. He ushered it in. Stand down, hell yes.
Sure.
Okay? Stand down, hell yes. Why do you...
Well, you know, the NORAD tapes were released. We know now, because I did a show on it a year ago or some such, when the audio came out. The jets that were scrambled went out over the Atlantic.
Yeah.
Because
they didn't have weapons.
They were... And right.
They were unarmed.
And that was how poor the direction was, how intentional it was. Okay.
Yeah, I can believe a stand down. I have no proof of it, and nobody's really provided any actual proof that there was an intention to get in the way of NORAD. But I will tell you something: in between wars, the U.S. military becomes incapable of fighting. It happens every time. World War II, Operation Puchenschlag, off the eastern seaboard of the United States. Hitler and Dönitz sent U-boats to harass American shipping to the extent that they could off the coast. You know what they found? They found an American coast that was fully lit. All the navigational lights were turned on. All of the destroyers and aircraft were happily sleeping in their ports, and they had a field day. They had a month and a half or 2 months there where they were able to just shoot at anything. And even when we sent out destroyers, they didn't know what the heck they were doing.
Sure.
Okay. You know, it was absolutely the American military, even though nobody was interfering with it then during Operation Puchenschlag, was absolutely incapable of fighting. And I think NORAD was a paper tiger, largely. It was meant to take care of a Cold War threat, and I don't even think it would have been able to take care of Russian bear bombers. Okay? It was a lie, like a lot of things the military does is a lie. Do you realize we put Polaris missiles in submarines and sent them out to sea as though they were some kind of deterrent for almost 8 years? With warheads that we knew couldn't explode?
No.
Yeah. We knew they couldn't explode, but we thought the Russians didn't know.
Oh, for pity's sakes.
Yeah, because we tested that warhead. It didn't go.
God almighty.
Finally, they put a new warhead on them. But Polaris missiles went to sea with a warhead that couldn't explode.
Well, what do we do then? Because, you know, I'm seeing things. People are upset. They think that... you're saying, and I've heard this twice now. You're saying that people in the so-called 9/11 Truth Movement are actually CIA insiders.
They are CIA insiders, some of them.
But the folks on the ground who view this stuff, who expend and invest incredible amounts of their own time, their own finite time, trying to understand what the hell is going on in this incredibly upside down, down the rabbit hole, back bass ackwards, life in the funhouse world.
I know they feel
how do you say this, Ben? Those people aren't plants. Those people aren't spies. Those people are dedicated to the idea that this government ought to be the government that we're talking about on the 4th of July.
Absolutely. I know they are. But they have also been duped by experts. I really believe that. I really believe that some of these people, perhaps Jones, I don't know, but I know his conclusions are wholly wrong.
Well, will you forgive me if I say that I'm inclined to be a little suspicious of Stephen Jones because of the institution from which he comes?
And the fact that his involvement with the cold fusion thing?
Yeah, I forgot about cold fusion.
You know, that's why he's famous. Until now, anyway.
Yeah, the cold fusion that doesn't work.
Well, actually, his version of it, muon-catalyzed fusion... works to an extent, but it can't chain react, and so it's useless.
This is one of those things that tears us to pieces, and I hate it. I hate it. That's why I avoid talking about it.
I avoid this too, but it is really my heartfelt opinion that the whole 9/11 truth movement would look better at finding how it is that we allowed those flight schools to train those people without interference, why it is that the FBI memos that said that, hey, there are these Arabs training at flight schools and they're asking to learn how to just fly but not land. And, you know, all those other things that were occurring, you know,
the Phoenix memo.
Why the Bin Laden family was left alone when specifically...
Why was it necessary to gag Sybil Edmonds?
Yes. Yes, and why did they gag Sybil Edmonds? The whole thing is rotten. The whole thing is rotten. Bush knew this was going to happen. Cheney knew this was going to happen. We all knew that eventually we were going to get hit by the terrorists and we were going to do nothing to stop it in advance because we wanted the war, or they did.
It is, in fact, as many are wont to point out, Ben, It is reminiscent of Operation Northwoods. The thing with Operation Northwoods, though, was the CIA was willing to bomb an American city and blame it on the Cubans to start World War III.
Yep.
In this instance, the evidence was out there that something like this was going to happen, and so we didn't have to overtly pull an Operation Northwoods. We just let an Operation Northwoods happen. Is that a fair expression of what you're saying?
That is absolutely, that's absolutely my belief. I believe that my belief is stronger than let it happen on purpose. No, he helped it happen on purpose. And in doing so, he violated that one clause in the Constitution where it says that you shall not give aid and comfort to an enemy of the United States. In other words, George Bush and the top members of administration have all committed capital treason as a result of allowing those hijackers to take those planes and allowing them to do what they did on 9/11. I don't even think they knew the World Trade Center was
going to get any...
I think they thought they were going to have a hijacking situation.
Yeah, with lots of terror and then somebody on a white horse riding to the rescue and see how competent we are?
And then as a result, of course, we have to kill Saddam. That was the plan from the beginning.
Well, that's why what was his name, Paul O'Neill, first Treasury Secretary under Bush, is in a meeting on January, what, the 24th, four days after they're in office, and they're already talking about Saddam?
Yes. Absolutely.
And Richard,
this was the plan from the beginning. This was in the PNAC document.
And Richard Clark
has needed the terrorist event.
Right. And Richard Clark is in there. He gets completely isolated and he's screaming. It was his phrase. He was running around the room with his hair on fire, trying to, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. This is going to happen. And, you know, the only thing they didn't do is go to him and say, Richard, shut up. We know it's going to happen. Shut up already.
I know. Look, here's the deal. If you're the Bush administration, you've got two choices. One is you know that there are these terrorists out here who have been trying to hit us forever. In fact, in 2000, there was supposed to have been a New Year's Day terrorist incident that the Clinton administration averted. It would have been big. All right? Why would you, if you know a terrorist incident is being planned and is coming and is going to fulfill your need, would you then attempt to enhance it by planting bombs in the World Trade Center? Why would you do that? Because, you know, the consequences of being caught doing that are horrific. What if you've been caught planting these bombs the way the Watergate burglars were caught removing their bugs? That is not a risk you'd take. You would say, whatever these terrorists do, it's going to kill some people, and we can use it. And if they crash an airplane into something, that's going to work fine. And it would have worked fine. Those buildings didn't have to fall to get exactly the effect George Bush wanted. Therefore, because they didn't have to fall to get that effect, there is no reason to invent a plot in which he does that.
That is a very interesting point, Ben, because let's play a little what if. The planes fly into the buildings remain standing. Does that change George Bush's response? Does that keep him from initiating the bombing of Afghanistan? Does that keep him from October 2002 going and talking about Saddam Hussein manufacturing nuclear widgets and having weather balloon trucks that are actually Zyklon B manufacturing centers? Does that change any of that? If the buildings are still standing but they're hit by a plane, does Colin Powell still go to the United Nations and lie his rotten ass off?
He sure does. The whole plan only needed... they only would have had to succeed with one of those planes. One. One plane into the Pentagon. One plane into either of those towers. Hell, one plane into the Capitol building. That's where they think 93 was going. Any one of those things would have been sufficient to do everything he needed. Heck, if all they had done was set off a truck bomb in front of the World Trade Center and broke all the glass and killed a few hundred people, that would have been enough. He didn't need to make the buildings fall. He didn't need to make Building 7 fall, especially. I don't know why anyone thinks that that would have been bothered with, given that, you know, the other two were flattened. Okay, absolutely no reason to deal with Building 7 when you've got either one of the other two falling into the ground. I mean, if you're going to plant bombs, you're only going to bomb one of those things.
What about the put options on the airlines?
Well, clearly somebody knew this was coming.
See, for me, I look at the put options, and I'm thinking that's not Osama bin Laden on, you know, on dial-up, hooking up with AOL to do his put options.
No, this is probably somebody, some friend of his in the Saudi royal family, I'm thinking. But you notice those put options were never collected.
No, they weren't. That's true.
You know, so somebody thought better of it. People knew this was coming. Bush knew this was coming. Bush knew. Why do you think he went on that nice long vacation? It was so he wouldn't be in D.C. when the planes hit.
Don't forget plausible deniability.
Yeah, that helps too. Anyways, that's my opinion. You know, people can hate me for it, and they probably will. But
that's the one thing. I'm not seeing anybody hating you, Ben. I'm seeing people hurt. I'm seeing people who are saying that, you know, you're just missing it. I've got it. I'm sorry, but
mind, I am an engineer with physics training, and I can calculate these things for myself, and I've done a lot of the calculations.
I've got one here. I'm sorry, but what Ben is saying flies in the face of known physical facts. This is important, though. What we know is that what the officials told us does not jive with physical reality. We've been lied to. The details can only come from the people who did it. And once again, asking you about the huge steel girders sliced at perfect angles, just like in a demolition. What about the thermite? We covered that.
Yeah, we covered that. There's a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of people attempting to make stuff out of stuff they see in fuzzy video.
And frankly, you know, things like the miraculous passport that survives the ball of burning kerosene, all of that stuff.
Things that are long chances aren't long chances now after they've happened. Okay?
Well, not just that, but that's the kind of stuff. You know, 100 bombs is one thing. One stinking passport, you can plant that.
You could plant that. And maybe they did plant that. And maybe, you know.
Because, again, I like you, tend to fall on the side of they knew it was coming, they did nothing to stop it, and they did some things to facilitate it.
Yep. And then they had a plan that they executed brilliantly for making capital with it. They got that Patriot Act in. They got their war. They got their reelection. They got their looting of the American government. And by the way, that was the real goal here, was to loot the American government. And we are now bankrupt. We are now trillions of dollars more in debt than we were when George Bush came into office, and we will be paying for it.
And who got the money for that? Halliburton, Carlyle Group, Kellogg Brown and Root,
Raytheon,
GE,
General Dynamics, Boeing. They all got that money. They all got their share of the pie, and that was the whole reason for this. That's the whole reason for PNAC. PNAC is a plot to loot the American people, and it worked, and we've been screwed. And right now, fighting over 9/11 and trying to prove it was some kind of bomb is not what we need to do politically. It is getting in the way of doing what we have to do, which is to say, hey, you lied us into a war, you helped terrorists attack us, and now you've looted our treasury. I think that there's a jail cell in your future, and that's where we need to go from here.
Well, Ben, the other side of this coin, and it's something that I've repeated frequently, and I've angered some people with this, and I'm not trying to. But that is that as long as we are looking backward at this, and not watching them closely, not looking forward, then we make it all the more likely that another one of these will occur.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it fools.
I mean, look what these people, you know, in the rest of the world, look what they're capable of. Train bombings, train station bombings, lone Mercedes and Jeep vehicles with propane and gasoline in them, okay? This is what they do. This is how they operate. And the thing is, there are other theories and other questions still unanswered about the train bombing in London. But again, look what people get out of it. And moreover, the other thing that I think is very interesting in all of this is that how many people are in custody now following the Glasgow and the other empty vehicle things in the UK? They have gone after.
I don't exactly. I know they got some people.
They got a bunch, up to 8, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is, they got these through law enforcement means. Now,
right.
Before and after 9/11, we stood down not just the Air Force, but the law enforcement. It's verified. It's documented. There's no way you can say no, it didn't happen, because it did. These are facts.
Absolutely.
We abnegated any interest in catching the perpetrators of this via law enforcement, which is the natural and normal course of doing this, because we want George wanted to, and you know, there's psychology stuff involved here. There's the father son Oedipus complex. There's Napoleon complex. Little man. You know, all that stuff that plays into this. He wanted to go and play with his military and make things go boom.
Yep.
Because that's where the money is. Smedley Butler was right. War is a racket.
Yep, and you know what rackets need? Rackets need suckers. And when you look in the mirror in the morning, just like I do, you're seeing one.
We've all been had.
We've all been had. Well, sir, on that pleasant note, I will leave you tonight.
Thank you, Ben. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. You know, in some places, they say it's not polite to talk about politics or religion. We talk about politics and religion here all the time. This, 9/11, is the third rail of liberal and progressive conversation, liberal and progressive politics, but most importantly, 9/11 is the third rail of liberal and progressive cohesiveness. I do not know the answers from 9/11. I will not sit here and pretend that I do. Some things seem fairly obvious. I think the complicity of the Bush administration is obvious to me. If it's not complicity, it is gross negligence at a level that would require removal from office had we but a government that was willing to be what it is constitutionally constituted to be. There is a hope that proving somehow 9/11 would get George Bush out of office. It isn't going to. Because there's only one person who can make George Bush get out of office. And she has said that under no uncertain terms will she participate in any attempt to remove him. I am disgusted by that. For the little pieces of bodies that still lay in a dump with debris and detritus from the World Trade Center site and whose families are crying out for the decent interment of those remains, for those people, for the 3,580 some odd men and women, aunts, uncles, cousins, fathers, brothers, sisters, mothers, aunts, who have died in this stinking war in Iraq that rose out of the ashes of 9/11. For those of us who are cursed and sentenced to a lifetime spent wondering just how wicked our own government can be, we deserve some level of accountability. Unfortunately, we do not have a government that is willing to give us that accountability. And one of our emailers was absolutely correct. Only the people who did it can tell us how it was done. And they're not talking. We'll be back tomorrow night. I'll hopefully have it together a little bit better. I'm sorry for tonight. Just didn't come off the way I wanted it to. Perk Up! Strictly Confidential with Peter Godbold is on its way. Tonight's show was, of course, produced by the lovely and talented my wife, Agnes. John Fox is our engineer. Ben Birch is the hardest working man in liberal talk at WhiteRoseSociety.org. We are grateful to the United Brotherhood of Carpenters who helped us get this network started and are helping us to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Quality News Network. New evidence is surfacing regarding the terrorist bombings in the United Kingdom. Investigators say a house near the Glasgow airport was where the bombs were made. Two men suspected in the recent failed car bombings rented the house. Investigators are not revealing many details of their investigation. The British government, meanwhile, is fighting to retain its anti-terrorism powers that it says are vital to the country's security. That after the courts decided those emergency powers may still violate human rights by allowing authorities to hold suspects without convicting them. A subway derailment in London was an accident and has no ties to terrorism. It happened during rush hour traffic this morning and was likely caused by debris on the tracks. 37 people were injured. A car bomb in the Shiite area of Baghdad killed 17 people as they were posing for wedding photos. The bride and groom were wounded. A roadside bomb also killed two U.S. troops. A top Al-Qaeda leader delivers a message to America in a new 90-minute video. On the tape, Ayman al-Zawahiri insists Al-Qaeda is directly leading the insurgency against American and coalition forces in Iraq. Experts say his statements also reveal conflicts within the terrorist group itself. Recently, some Sunni insurgents separated themselves from Al-Qaeda. The Israeli military crosses into the Gaza Strip, killing 11 Palestinian militants. An Israeli army spokesperson said troops were carrying out a routine raid. Hamas leaders claim they had a right to respond to incoming fire from the Israelis. Yemeni authorities arrest dozens of suspects in Monday's suicide bombing of the Queen of Sheba Temple. They're believed to have ties to Al-Qaeda. The attack killed 7 Spanish tourists. A tense standoff is entering its third day at an Islamabad mosque in Pakistan. Authorities rejected terms for a surrender, insisting that those holed up inside release women and children they're using as human shields. The mayor of